Comics podcast. As mostly always, I'm your host Adam, and with me is Jordan, as always. Jordan, how's it going?
I'm super today, AB, as I always am. We're talking about the greatest TV show of all time. I am so excited.
I'm just going to warn you, if you call me that beyond this episode, I may come through the computer and beat the crap out of you with my cane.
I think you should be calling him that for as long as Jimmy Olsen is in Smallville.
Ryan, I'm going to come on the other side of wherever the hell you live and beat the crap out of you with my other cane. How about that?
I was about to suggest the same thing. We'll do.
I got more than one cane lying around this house. I'll tell you that much. You know, I'll paint my hair green, put some makeup on, and go Joker on your asses. How about that?
Okay, bring it.
But again, we've got our countdown clock.
Since Ryan spoke, we'll tell everybody that we do have a guest.
Yeah, we'll introduce him first.
We do have a guest on this podcast, and it's, I call this podcast Multiverse Musings, A Tale of Two Co-Hosts, because they're both here. Ryan Hulsman is back on the show, who filled in very well in my absence on the Teen Titans Go episode, I must say. Nice job.
Where Jordan and I spent, 10 minutes combined talking about the movie. And
yeah, which is fine by me. I actually enjoyed your comic recommendation, so it was good. Well done to both of you. Good job hosting again, Jordan.
Thank you.
And so, Ryan's here because he wanted to talk to Smallville, and so we're going to let him do that. But before we do that, we are going to, Jordan wants to tell us about a countdown to something. I don't know what it is, but, go ahead, Jordan. What's the countdown for?
It was you
who brought up the idea.
Yeah, I know, but we're counting down to so many things. I don't know what the hell is on the list anymore.
Oh, okay. Well, next up, the next DC movie to be released is Freedom Fighters, The Ray, and we are 3 days away from it. So, as of this recording anyway, actually it'll be out by the time this episode releases. Very exciting.
So there you go. If you're listening to this, when we release it, go pick it up if you want to. If not, that's your choice too. Let's get into our usual way we've been starting episodes lately. Comic recommendations. Ryan, any comic recommendations from you this time around?
I do have a few. One I will bring up is, as I'm sure listeners know, that I'm sure I've made reference to this in other shows, that I'm starting to rebuild my new 52 DC collection, because that was the era of the DC universe that really got me into collecting everything and reading superhero comics again. So, well, it only lasted 5-6 years. That's, my era. #MyEra.
Yeah, the way. Well, since we're going all rapper with initials and shit, why not? let's go.
One I do want to kind of point out that I had always wished that they had carried over into the Rebirth era, and they really haven't. And it's upset me a little bit, is the Earth 2.
Oh, I agree. Comics. Yeah, yeah.
Because I really like seeing a modern-day twist on the Justice Society. And I liked how the New 52 handled it, where, the first volume of Justice League in the main universe dealt with Darkseid and the Parademons invading Earth, where in the Earth 2 comics, it was Steppenwolf. And that's where I know Steppenwolf from.
Yeah.
Is from the Earth 2 comics.
Mm-hmm.
And how he was responsible for the death of that world's Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. And out of the,
Spoilers for anybody who hasn't read the New 52.
Spoiler alert, comic almost 10 years old.
Well, it's not 10 years. Not quite
it's,
10
it's,
years.
It's 7.
It's getting there, yeah.
You know what, Adam?
I'm trying to be factual. This is not fake news on this show. It's real news.
Fake news. but I really liked how, out of all that tragedy, is how Jay Garrick and Hawkgirl and Alan Scott Green Lantern, seeing those twists on those classic characters from, you know, the 40s, 30s and 40s.
Yeah, I liked it. Yeah, it was good. I liked your recommendation.
And, yeah, and
I like Smallville's take on Earth, too.
Why am I not surprised?
Shocking. Continue, Ryan.
And another one that I will recommend, because I'm going back and finally getting my hands on the new editions that DC put out about a year or two ago, the Death and Return of Superman. From the 90s. I'm finally sitting my ass down and reading those classic comics.
Had you never read the story before?
I had a long time ago.
Oh, okay. Just checking because spoilers. Yeah. Superman dies.
Spoilers. Fights Doomsday and he dies.
Yeah, in case you didn't know, because you know, it was in Batman versus. It was in Batman versus Superman, and it was in.
In case you didn't listen to our review of the Death of Superman movie.
It was also in that.
And if you have no idea what the hell Superman Lives would have been about had that movie got made.
Mm. Yeah.
I would easily, no question, hands down, one of the best Superman stories of almost any era.
Cool. So those are your two recommendations.
Those are the two that I'll...
Earth 2 and Death and Return of Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Very good. Jordan, what do you got to recommend this week?
My recommendation is Action Comics number 1002, the latest issue of Action Comics.
Mm, it's on my list of things to read.
What's that?
I'm going to be reading that tomorrow. So yeah.
Oh, okay, nice. Well, I won't spoil anything, but I'll just say I really enjoy how it explores, you know, it's exploring a really cool part of the Metropolis underworld that we've never seen before, which is really cool. There's this really powerful moment where we see how Superman sort of, what he does to take his anger out, and I thought that was really powerful. And then the ending is a really cool cliffhanger that has come next. So, really enjoying what Brian Michael Bendis is doing there. And, super issue there.
Sweet. Looking forward to reading it. For my recommendation, I'm going to go with this week's issue of The Flash, number 53. I won't spoil anything specific because Ryan's probably going to get around to reading that at some point.
I'm a couple weeks behind, but it'll get there.
Yeah. So, but basically, events since the Flash War are now they're starting to expand the Speed Force. There are multiple forces now, and one of them is the Strength Force, and that gets highlighted in this.
I was just going to make a joke. Is this like the Green Lantern Corps and all the different colors in the spectrum?
You could make that comparison. I think that's okay. It's a fair comparison.
Oh my God. That's okay.
It's very interesting, very intriguing, and it has quite an interesting effect on one of the Flash's rogues, the Strength Force does, and also on the Flash as well. So. That title, The Flash, is one that usually goes without many mentions in the comics media, but it chugs along and is always consistent, and it's one of my personal favorite titles. So, Flash number 53 is my pick.
Awesome! I can't wait to read it.
You'll enjoy it. Yeah. And then that transitions us into a little bit of news, comics related. Brian Edward Hill, who has finished up as of this week, or is there one more left, Jordan? I don't know. I think he's done, right?
He just finished up.
Yeah. He just finished up his run on Detective Comics. Is if you've read that arc, which, again, I won't spoil in case Ryan eventually gets to it, he sowed the seeds for a return of Batman and the Outsiders team, and that is exactly what he will be writing next for DC proper, is Batman and the Outsiders. He'll be joined by artist Dexter Soy. I think I got that right. And he'll be working with the team of Batman, Katana, Cassandra Cain, who is now Orphan, who called Orphan. There's Duke Thomas, which is the Signal. Who else is on the team? Am I missing somebody? Black Lightning. How could I forget Black Lightning? And then, of course, Batman's going to be there, you know, leading the charge. So I loved his run on Detective. So I can't wait for this. I really think he's got – especially what he did with Cassandra Cain. I am so stoked for him to carry that forward and see where he takes these Gotham characters. And I believe that comes out in either December or January. I'm not too sure.
Is it supposed to be an ongoing?
Yes, it's an ongoing as far as I know. Right, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I'm excited for that. How about you, Jordan? I know Ryan expressed some excitement there. But what about you?
I think this is awesome. Brian Hill is getting basically pay off the same he basically did the same tease that Beware the Batman did with the Outsiders, except he's getting to pay it off, whereas Beware the Batman didn't get to.
Yeah, which is unfortunate because that was a good show.
Oh, it is very unfortunate. That show is phenomenal. But, I think it's really cool.
Sweet. And that's the comic news for this week's short and sweet. What's next, Jordan, in terms of news?
Alrighty, we're moving right along into our film news, which is that Hans Zimmer is going to be scoring Wonder Woman
1984. Yes.
I guess I'll just go ahead and start off and say that... Yeah.
Well, Ryan already started off with his confirmation, but go ahead.
He started off with his sound reaction, I guess.
Yeah. We're going to hire him for sound effects. He's just going to record your bunch of effects.
I have a very similar... When I first read this news, I had a very similar... I made a very similar sound, I guess you could say, Ryan.
did you scream yes, too?
Yeah.
I screamed, but there was an expletive in front of the yes, so I won't say it.
No, I think this is amazing news. I mean, Hans Zimmer, my favorite film score of all time is his Man of Steel score, to have him returning to the DC universe is just, I mean, it's just extraordinary. And his Wonder Woman theme that he for Batman v Superman, of course, carried throughout DCU is amazing. So I mean, I just can't wait to see what he does with the whole score in Wonder Woman 1984. I think this is fantastic.
And I just have two comments of my own. Sure. One, the first one is, I'm so glad that Hans Zimmer, who I think is one of the best movie composers of all time, that's my personal opinion.
It's fine.
Because he's also one of the few who I argue you don't need to you don't need the context of the visuals itself. Mm-hmm. His scores can stand on their own.
Oh yeah,
all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I love how, how often can someone say that they got to do the three top, movie scores for the three top superheroes at DC? He's done the Batman trilogy, two Superman movies, and now he gets to do Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And on top of that, he did Spider-Man, and this kind of leads into my second point that I want to make. Let's just call BS on him when he said that he was retiring from superhero movies, because not only is he doing Wonder Woman 1984, but also earlier this year, it was revealed that he is also going to do X-Men Dark Phoenix. So
In real quick, Ryan, just to comment on something you said right there. I know a lot of people I've seen several people say that he's the first composer to do the entire Trinity. That would actually be Christopher Drake, because he did the 2009 Wonder Woman film, and he's also done animated Batman and Superman movies.
Christopher Drake. My apologies. I didn't put into consideration like the animated.
I don't think you didn't specifically call out that he was the first one, but I've heard other people call it out. So I wanted to clarify that actually he is not technically the first one to do that.
Yeah, but most of these news sites don't count the animation. And that's probably why they didn't put it in. Yeah, and that's probably why they didn't put it in.
But clearly Zimmer just didn't want to do Justice League for some reason, which really bums me out.
Well, probably when Snyder was off the project, he's like, all right, I'm done.
But I thought he left. I thought he said he was done after BVS and before stuff.
Well, Junkie XL was originally supposed to do Justice League before Danny Elfman came in. So actually, Zimmer was never.
I can imagine. Yeah. I can imagine it's probably because he saw what was going on behind the scenes. And he was probably like, I'm not going to be part of this. So.
And if that's true, that's really unfortunate. I'm with a lot of people. I would have been nice to have seen him
continue on Justice League. Especially for Superman's return. But I will say that in his return to the DC Films universe, I'm happy that he's back on Wonder Woman because that Wonder Woman theme was iconic. I mean, the individual who did the film score, Rupert, what was his name? Rupert something.
Rupert Gregson Williams.
I knew it was a something. Yeah, yeah. he did a great score. I'm not belittling his score on Wonder Woman. I'm just saying, he's like, I'm just going to keep this theme and run with it. And so, but it'll be interesting to see what Hans Zimmer does addition to the Wonder Woman theme, the one that we heard in BVS for the first time. So I'm happy that he's back. And I'm crossing my fingers that his experience with Patty Jenkins, if Supergirl ends up coming out before the next Superman film, I hope he comes back to do Supergirl. But that's just me being a fanboy and hoping.
I would like that for him to do.
Just come back and do all the DC movies. That's fine.
I'm sorry. You're the DC guy.
Just be the musical connoisseur of all things modern DC. Start a petition.
We're not going to have like a movie director oversee the DC film universe. We're just going to have Hans Zimmer do it.
Yeah, it's going to all be based on the music.
Exactly. I'm okay with that.
Hey, that might work.
His music is the best.
So. At this point, what do we got to lose? Let's try it. But yeah, I think we're all happy. So it's three thumbs up, which is awkward because that's kind of weird. But there it is.
Six thumbs up.
That's better. There's a better notch. There it is. So what's next, Jordan?
Cool. Well, moving on to our TV news. First up, Justice League Action is back at McDonald's. This is actually the third fast food promotion for Justice League Action. Around the time the show first premiered back in 2016, they did a fast food promotion with McDonald's. Then just recently, they wrapped one up with Burger King, and now they're back at McDonald's. We've got a large array of toys here. We've got Supergirl binoculars. We've got a Superman Frisbee. We've got a Batgirl Batarang, which is interesting to point out, because this is this special art. Batgirl has not appeared on the show. But they did actually, for just the action promotion in another country, they had one of their artists draw Batgirl. So that's actually been out there for a while, and now we're seeing some merchandise in the States now. And is it in Canada, too? Do they have this promotion there, too?
Not that I've seen, but I haven't been to Burger King or McDonald's in a while, so I'm not 100% sure on that. My question is, how many of those toys do you have already, Jordan?
They just started this promotion, so I've not gotten.
Oh, all right, but I'm sure so you'll.
I got almost when they just because I like I said I just wrapped up the Burger King one. I got almost all of them. The Burger King one, quite, but almost all of them.
Okay, all right. Well, you got the crown, right? So it's gotta go along. You gotta get them all, so they can go with your with the crown that you have. Yeah. No, I'm not joking. He's got a crown.
Yes, I do.
It's not a joke. It's.
I have multiple, actually.
Yeah.
Of course you do.
It's good.
Well, yes, we've got the Batgirl Batarang. So we finally got the Batgirl design. Yeah. You can finally get Batgirl in the States here, at least. We've got Stargirl glasses. We've got a Supergirl megaphone. And there's some other stuff here that I don't exactly know how to describe. Cool stuff here. This is very exciting. Whenever there's a DC promotion at a fast food restaurant, that's like the only place I eat out. Of the time that I'm there, so I cannot wait to start picking this stuff up. Like I said, they just started it, so I haven't gotten a chance to think of it yet. But I got almost all of them from the Burger King one, and I got almost all of them from the first McDonald's promotion they did as well. So I'm definitely hoping to pick these up. These look like awesome toys.
And I'm sure you'll get them all, or close to all of them. and you'll make up for the lack of them being in Canada or if they are. I don't even know. Seems to me with the fluctuation between Burger King and McDonald's, Justice League is getting a lot of action from the fast food restaurants.
It's true. But I'm hoping that we
still that was a very
maybe
very
the fact
forced...
since season one of Justice League Action has already ended and we don't have news of a renewal yet, the fact that they're doing this makes me think maybe we're starting to get to where there's a good chance that it will be renewed.
Well, let's hope so, because I actually quite enjoyed Justice League Action. So.
Oh, it's great.
I really did too. So.
All right. Well, Ryan, you got to go get. You know what? You got to get a toy, because I can't. So you have to go and get one of those. Yeah.
I'll get all the toys and ship them up to you. Don't worry.
Oh,
there you go.
That sounds good to me. All right.
I'll ask for two of each every time I go.
Perfect. Yeah, that's great. all right. What's next, Jordan?
Continuing on with our TV news, we had previously gotten news, and we talked about it on the show, that former Joker and, well, actually this ties in with our last piece of news, Justice League Action's Riddler, Brent Spiner, had been cast as Vice President Baker, I believe. Yeah, Vice President Baker in Supergirl Season 4. He has had to drop out of the role due to a family issue that conflicted with production dates. That's coming, I'm getting this from Craig Burns' article on Krypton site. He is being replaced by Bruce Boxleitner. Now, I was really looking forward to Brent Spiner just because I loved him as the Joker. I really liked his Joker as well. It's too bad that we're not going to see him in the role, but I'm really excited to see what Bruce Boxleitner brings to the role. I'm not familiar with him at all, but I'm definitely excited to see what he brings to this role.
Jordan, do you know the Disney movies Tron and Tron Legacy?
I know of them. I've never seen them.
Well, you know, the character of Tron, that was Bruce Boxleitner in the original movie and then also in the...
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
That's where I know him from.
Okay, I think I saw our buddy Zach Moore. He was from Always Hold on to Smallville. He was talking about him being Tron before. So, yeah, okay, I got you.
Cool.
Okay, yeah, I've never seen those. So
they went from Data to Tron, which is not, you know...
Okay, yeah, that's exactly what Zach was saying. Yeah, and I didn't know who either of those characters were really. So,
yeah,
I just hope he starts throwing out, those frisbee discs.
The Superman frisbee discs that they have at McDonald's.
Yeah, why
sure,
not? We'll
okay,
make sure.
All right, yeah, sure.
We'll make it a full circle and really just go. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, no, it's good. It's a shame that Brent Spiner had to drop out for family reasons.
Because I'm like with Jordan. I was really looking forward to seeing someone of his caliber and how beloved he is by fans of just the sci-fi genre. You know, Data, his, I forget the character's name off the top of my head, but from the
Joker?
There's that too, but I was thinking Independence Day. I was thinking live action.
Oh yeah, yeah.
From the two Independence Day movies.
That's right. I can't remember his name either, but yeah. No, it's but I mean, like I said, I'm sure Tron will do a good job. but yeah. So.
Well, moving on. We have news about the Arrowverse crossover this year, which is that.
Which is still starring Ruby Rose, much to the chagrin of the morons and the basement dwellers in our community. But yes.
Yeah, Ruby Rose is Batwoman, but in addition to her, we're also getting Tyler Hoechlin returning as Superman and the introduction of Lois Lane to the Arrowverse. So this is very exciting news. I love Tyler's Superman, and I've been very eager to see him again. Ever since we last saw him at the end of season 2, and I can't wait to see him not only interact with the Earth 38 characters again, but with the Earth 1 characters as well, and to see Lois make her Arrowverse debut, that's going to be really exciting as well. So, I mean, man, if I wasn't already as excited as could be for this crossover, I mean, now this just made me even more excited. So it's like, this crossover is going to be, it's going to be something special.
I know, finally, after how many years of having the Justice League crossover between all the shows, and finally Superman gets to play a part in it.
Yeah, I'm I'm thrilled at this because, well, let me just say that I was going to watch it anyway because A, it's the crossover, B, Batwoman and Gotham City's coming to town, and now you throw Superman and Lois into the mix. I know it's TV and they don't really have to, but take my money. Well, I guess they are because I'm paying for cable, but I really enjoyed Tyler's three appearances over the course of season two as Superman and Clark. We know that he's going to be in all three episodes, so we'll get to see him, you know, three more times, which is cool.
And we got dates for those two, by the way, which are December 9th, 10th, and 11th, I believe. And they're switching up the order, so I believe it's going to go The Flash, then Arrow, then Supergirl, I believe. So the
and
Flash
isn't it also Sunday, Monday, Tuesday?
Yes.
It is Sunday, Monday, days. Tuesday, okay. Yeah. And because Supergirl's right. on Sundays now, so they're flopping Supergirl and The Flash. So Flash is going to be on Sunday, and Supergirl's going to be on Tuesday.
Yeah, and so in addition, I love the fact that we're bringing on Lois because one of the cool things when Tyler first came on to Supergirl was that there was already, like, he was already established, you know, him and Lois were a thing. And so he was an established Superman, which is something that we haven't really gotten a chance to see, at least on modern TV. Like, I guess if you count Adventures of Superman, but that's why I said modern TV.
Live action TV.
Yeah, modern live action TV. Because, you know, if you look at Lois and Clark, right? It's you're tracking Superman at his first appearance, so he's still fresh faced.
At least you didn't have to wait until the series finale of Lois and Clark for him to
put on the stage. Yeah.
Don't you dare knock Smallville.
And then he's just saying the truth, whether he wanted to be it or not. It's a true fact. Smallville was an origin story for you know, Clark becoming Superman.
Exactly.
So,
exactly. No, so, he's accurate in his statement. I'm just saying that should not be a criticism.
To me, my personal opinion on the entire series of Smallville is that, in a way, Clark always wore the suits. I'm not talking about the black one that he wore with the white S or the leather jacket. The blue shirt and the red coat, to me, was the Superman costume.
Yeah.
For Smallville. Yeah.
And so that was an origin film. So, you know, again, learning how to be, you know, becoming the hero, if you will. So this will be really, you know, Tyler Hoechlin's version is really the first time we're seeing a well-established, already sure of himself Superman. So the addition of Lois and their pre-existing relationship is going to be something cool to watch. And the fact that, you know, Superman and Lois are coming on suggests to me, this is just my opinion, and I've heard this elsewhere, so it's not like I'm inventing the theory. But it confirms to me, in my head, I could be totally wrong, but to me that suggests that Batwoman as a character and then the eventual show will take place on Supergirl's Earth.
Thank you, because I have the same theory.
Because otherwise I don't think they'd be bringing on Superman.
Because to me, why would Superman and Lois multiverse hop if Batwoman, who's supposed to be a very key and central role, character in this year's crossover.
And like, remember, we've heard little back and forth, you know, quips on Supergirl about, mm-hmm. you know,
about Gotham and...
Yeah, and Superman having a friendship.
So do you think the crossover itself will take place primarily on Earth 38 this year?
Yeah, I think so.
Because it would definitely switch things up because for the last 2 years, for Invasion and Crisis on Earth X, it's always taken place on Green Arrow, Flash's universe.
Yeah, so I think they're gonna switch it up. I'm with Ryan here.
That would be cool.
And I think what's gonna be cool is to see if Superman brings up, because again they've teased his relationship with Batman. So I wonder if he'll bring it up, and maybe Superman will be the one to explain where exactly
Bruce is,
because I'm sure he's gonna have a smarmy comment about, you know, her being like her cousin or whatever. or being like that, and then he'll offhandedly explain where the hell Batman went to.
Now here's something that I want to throw out as a quickie little mini discussion question.
Yeah.
Do you think it might be possible that how they set up Batwoman is almost like they have her before Bruce on that planet? Do we know if Bruce Wayne is established as Batman?
On Earth 38, we do know. Yeah, he is.
Okay. He's Batman already. Yeah.
Because I remember references to a Bat character. I just didn't know if it was supposed to be Batman or if maybe they were going to switch it up and have it be Batwoman.
No, because first. No, because the reason I say no is because I distinctly remember when they were talking one time, Kara and Jimmy and all and the whole gang. And she mentioned something about the vigilante with all the gadgets. And then Kara made a comment like, oh, yeah, he's nuts or whatever. And she specifically said he. Okay. So,
okay, all
yeah.
righty.
So that's
I
why.
Say, I must have forgotten that little tidbit. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So he's established. I just wonder where he is. It could be a Dark Knight Returns kind of thing where he's left. Gotham
or maybe CW and DC just stop with these stupid edicts and let us have Batman.
Well, I mean, that'd be nice.
I know
it's not gonna happen.
I think I was just actually talking to Zach about this recently, and I think that basically we're at a point where the reason that Batman is still off limits is because of Gotham, and I think that once Gotham ends its run, I think that Batman will be accessible to the Arrowverse. That's just my theory. I think that the problem is that Bruce Wayne is technically already in live action DC TV, just on another network that, unlike CBS, is not does not own the CW. And so I think that's basically the main.
I want to believe that, but it's always been their excuse has always been that Batman is their movie moneymaker. And so they're not.
Yeah, well, you can have the movie moneymaker and also be allowed to use them on TV. Yeah.
I get your point, and I agree with you. I just that's
I know,
one of
I
those
know,
stances.
I know, and it's
because
it's
they've always been more liberal about giving Superman TV, which is why I'm hoping, and I don't care what anybody says, I'll watch both. I'm hoping this will eventually lead to a Tyler Heckman Superman.
Yes, because I'm one of those people who. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to get confused as to what universe we're talking about.
Well, I mean, you'd have to be a real idiot to confuse the movie Superman or Batman with the TV.
I really hope that we can get to the day where we can have a movie Superman, a movie Batman, a movie Wonder Woman, while at the same time having them on TV as well.
Yeah, but Ryan, you know we're getting, it's just a matter of time. You know we're getting a Themyscira TV show.
Oh God, I really wanted one.
So I know I want to watch that. So get on that sci-fi. It'd be a great companion.
Just
piece
do
of
it.
Krypton. Do it.
I just freaking do it.
Yeah. Go ahead. Well, I'm waiting for it.
Here's a segue from that news into our review of season 6 of the greatest TV show of all time, which is that Smallville alum Anthony Konechny is going to be recurring on Supergirl Season 4 as Agent Jensen, who, and this is coming from Craig from Krypton Site, is a DEO agent recruited by Alex, struggles to find his footing at the station. So yet another Smallville alum coming to the Arrowverse, specifically to Supergirl. Obviously the big one we just got was Sam Witwer, is going to be a series pick. But Anthony Konechny as well, is joining the cast for season 4, like I said, as a recurring character. He was the delivery boy at the beginning of the episode Idol of Smallville. He was the one who brought Clark and Lois that box that had the cops that the Wonder Twins had accidentally arrested. So he was that guy. And so now he's going to be on Supergirl. So very exciting. And there's a bonus Smallville Easter egg in this character, which is that his name is Agent Jensen, spelled J-E-N-S-E-N, and he's coming to Supergirl in season 4, and Jensen Ackles came to Smallville in season 4. So there's an extra Easter egg.
I think you're reaching with that one.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You're stretching further than Mr. Fantastic with that one.
No, I don't think I am. Maybe I would think I was, but except for the fact that this guy is a Smallville alum and his character is.
But here's the thing. Smallville went on for 10 years. There's going to be lots of Smallville. Like, it just because they shot in Vancouver, right? It's funny because off air, Jordan made a big this news seemed like it was the biggest thing since the DC Films shared universe got announced. And I don't even know who this guy is. I'll be honest with you.
I just told you he was in
Idol. You can tell me. I have no clue. I have no recollection of who the hell he is.
Okay, so at the beginning of Idol, Clark and Lois are at the Daily Planet, and this delivery boy comes in, and he asks them to sign for something, and it's this box, and the Wonder Twins have accidentally arrested all these cops that were actually undercover, but the Wonder Twins thought they were criminals, and they put them in this box.
I remember the episode.
What's that?
I remember the episode. You can explain it till you're blue in the face. I still won't remember this day. Like, it won't ring a bell. It was such an inconsequential character that it just doesn't ring a bell for me.
Well, all right.
I think you're breaking Jordan's heart here.
Well, I'm sorry. I don't remember every minuscule person or character that's been on the show. I don't remember the delivery man. Who cares about the delivery man?
Ouch.
Not real delivery man, a fictional delivery man. I mean, delivery men have their place, but I don't know the guy who I don't know the guy who delivers our mail by name.
I'm sure this guy is going to be fantastic on Supergirl, so let's just.
Yeah. Oh, his role will be much.
He was fantastic on Smallville too.
As a delivery man, all right, Jordan, you have an exquisite tact for giving high praise to the most minuscule of performances.
But, well, if it's Smallville, then. It gets a thumbs up in my book.
What would you rate the craft service table, which you've never tasted, is my question.
What was that?
What would you rate the craft service table of Smallville? How was the food? Yeah, I mean, you've never tasted it, but I'm assuming.
I've never tasted it, but just given the fact that everything else Smallville does is an A+ in my book, it's an A+.
All right, good. I'm sure the caterers will be pleased, but I guess we can go ahead and start our review now.
I'm just still waiting for Tom Welling to show up as Lex Luthor. That's just my.
I'm still waiting for Margot Robbie to show up at my door. Guess which one will happen first? Probably Margot Robbie showing up at my door.
Tom Welling is like, that would just be incredible. Like, because he showed on Smallville how well he can play a villain. Like, when he plays, going back to Earth 2, plays Clark Luthor. I mean, and so.
Clark Luthor, Bizarro. Yeah.
Yep.
But he'll never do it. So.
Bizarro, who we'll talk about on this.
It's a moot point because he'll never do it.
You don't know that. I never thought I'd see Erica Durant back in the.
Yeah, but Erica Durance is, I don't know, she's more amenable to appearing.
Tom Welling's getting back to that.
He said he already pretty much confirmed the only way he'll return is if it's a Smallville. He's basically already said, I didn't want to come on. I don't want to go on Superman or Supergirl. It's not our thing. We did our thing. And he did a whole spiel on Michael Rosenbaum's podcast. He said the only way he'd return to this world is if it was a Smallville animated show, which I'd be all for, or movie.
Oh my god! A Smallville animated movie that was like an adaptation of the season 11 comics.
Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah,
I prefer if it was even set after the season 11 comics, so we actually got a new story set after those.
Yeah. I hope.
But, I take the season 11 comics adapted in anime. Yeah. Absolutely, I would be all over that. But if I had my choice, it would actually be set after that. Okay, well, I guess we'll move right into season 6 of the greatest TV show of all time. What a phenomenal season, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness. Let's start. Do you want to do some, do you want to go episode by episode first, or do you want to do like the general overall take on the season, like, and then
I guess we, like I said, my comments on a lot of the episodes are going to be minimal because I liked a handful.
Yeah.
So maybe we can go.
My comments are going to be kind of the same, but not for quality reasons. But it's almost, it's like how when I binge watch like The Office or something. At some point when I'm binge watching a whole season, all the episodes kind of start blurring together. Yeah. With the exception of like big stuff.
In that case, I say let's just roll. We'll go episode by episode, and at the end we'll give a general overall thoughts on the season. So the first episode of the season is Zod, written by Stephen S. DeKnight. Got to call that out. And in this episode, we get some very significant things, which are we get more of Michael Rosenbaum as Zod, which is just amazing. We get Raya, and we get the greatest Jimmy Olsen ever, Aaron Ashmore. And
I'm sorry, Batman versus Superman, Jimmy Olsen's still the best.
I'm going to go with Sam Huntington because, yeah.
In my opinion, though, Aaron Ashmore is the best. And as soon as he shows up here, like what I love about Aaron Ashmore's Jimmy, and let's just start talking about it here because this is where he came. There's so much charm to him. He has such a good heart, but he's so insecure too. And it's like he's this character that he's so likable. I find him so likable. And, like, as soon as he shows up, first of all, his relationship with Chloe is so cute. I love them together so much. They're, in terms of my favorite Smallville ships, obviously we all know Klaana is my OTP. They're number one. But Jimmy and Chloe are number two for me. I just think Jimmy and Chloe are so together. They have so many amazing moments throughout that we'll talk about going forward. But I think Jimmy and Chloe are great together. And Jimmy, just everything about him, the way he calls Clark CK, as I've been joking about a lot this episode, calling you guys great. I think that's great. The way he's all worried, he's very, like I said, insecure, and he's like very easily jealous of Clark. And so he's like when he's like when he calls Chloe, he's like my girl, and Chloe's like your girl, and he's like yeah you are, of course. Like let's not talk about this. Now this is actually wither. Anyway. Everything about Aaron Ashmore's Jimmy Olsen, he just puts a smile on his face. I think, as an additional show, he's one of the highlights of season 6 for me. Just such an amazing.
Now, the reason why he's probably jealous is because he probably has heard once or twice, kind of has an idea of what Chloe's feelings for Clark were all throughout high school.
Yeah, well, like there's that scene later on. It's after Crimson happens, and he's talking to Chloe. He's like, "You treat him like he walks on water, and he's so in your mind, like he can do no wrong," and that frustrates Jimmy. And so it's like what I love about Jimmy is you can really tell that he really loves Chloe, but he's very insecure, and he's very I don't know what the word is other than insecure that I can think of, but he's so likable. Like, I just love this version of Jimmy so much.
He is definitely adorkable.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think Ashmore's version of Olsen is definitely, of all the live action ones we have, is the most adorkable.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of this Jimmy Olsen. I think that, by the way, the CK thing is not original. That was on Lois and Clark, the Jimmy that.
Oh, I know it's not original to this Jimmy, but so, I do love the way he does it.
It could have been done as a reference a little.
Right, I'm just saying it's not originally his creation.
I wasn't trying.
No, I'm not saying you were saying that. I'm just pointing that out for people that may not have watched Lois and Clark or not know. But yeah, I wasn't a fan. I didn't find him likable. I found him annoying most often. So, and the relationship, it was nice that Chloe had somebody, but watching it back these years later in hindsight with the Allison Mack stuff, it's just weird. So yeah, Jimmy didn't do anything for me.
Even like in later seasons as they grew up, you still had an issue with him.
At the end it got worse because we found out he wasn't actually the quote-unquote Jimmy Olsen. So it only got worse.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, well, if they haven't watched Smallville at this point, they're not going to. To me, the best part of this, of the premiere, was the actual stuff with Clark in the Phantom Zone, and then Rosenbaum playing
Zod,
Lex being possessed by Zod. That was what was the highlight for me.
And if I can go all dork here for a second, yeah, and put on my cinematic parallels glasses.
Sure.
But when Lex Azad, after the brief fight with Clark through the forest, yeah, and through the field, and he has him kneeling down, has Clark kneeling down in front of him, it's just, I smiled in Batman versus Superman when Lex has Superman kneel before him in a very similar, yeah, fashion.
Yes. Yeah, that was that's a good similarity.
So I think that's just an obvious like wink to the Smallville fans.
And it was sort of nice. And it was sort of nice to see. I know it wasn't Lex and Clark, but there was an element of that.
It was
like, to see them finally.
Yeah.
To see them finally, you know, confront and fight, because you know it's always been this, you know, accusatory standoff, like let's argue it out verbally, mm-hmm, because you know if Clark wanted to, he could snap his neck with a flick of the finger. So that's why it's,
if I wanted it, you'd be, yeah, dead already.
Yeah.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
There's a BVS nod for, yeah, you, Ryan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. So you know I like the fact that we got to see an actual physical confrontation. And it was more than just throwing somebody across the room, which is the typical mode of fighting for the first 4.5 seasons.
And that shot of them flying through the sky together is just like,
yeah,
they used it. They started using it for a couple of years in the intro, but yeah, it's such a shot.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a very well choreographed fight. Mm-hmm. And pretty
bloody for, you know, television at the
time. Yeah, especially for the WB/CW. I guess it was the CW at this point, right?
Yeah, season 6 was, that's a good thing to point out. Season 6 is the first season after they switched to the CW.
So okay, yeah, cool, yeah. Okay. And so I liked all that. And I liked the fact that they saved the, he said, he didn't say kneel before Zod in the traditional way. There was an allusion to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the fact that, whether intentionally or unintentionally, they saved it for when Zod, quote-unquote, proper Zod, came on.
Yeah.
In a later season. And then the cool thing was when Clark sort of uses the Superman S-Shield toy that he may have gotten from McDonald's or Burger King, to tie it all in with our new segment, to trap Zod back in the Phantom Zone. When Zod's spirit is exiting Lex, you can actually see Terrence Stamp's.
Thank you. I face. Was hoping I wasn't the only one, yeah, that noticed.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was really, really awesome. And then the other thing I want to point out about this, another favorite of mine from the episode, is that we actually got to see inside the Phantom Zone for briefly. I wish it was longer. Mm-hmm.
We get more of it later.
Yeah, I don't know, but I wish for the purpose of this episode it would have lasted a little bit longer. But you know the barren, cold wasteland that it is, with the phantoms, you know, flying around. Looks like a good place.
They're so creepy. Yeah. The phantoms.
Looks like that first shot when the phantom attacks Clark. It was very reminiscent of the 2009 J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie.
Going to say Dementors.
Yeah,
I was thinking more Dementors from Harry Potter, too.
But. Yeah, yeah. No, but I thought, and again, what year was season 6?
Well, 2006, 2007. So this episode was 2006.
Right? Okay, so this happened before. Maybe J.J. Abrams took inspiration from that Smallville scene. I don't know. But.
Well, that's why it's probably more likely inspired by Dementors, because Dementors were on screen before this.
Well, sure, whatever. But the first thing that came to mind was the 2009 Star Trek scene.
Gotcha.
Okay. For me, so yeah. But yeah.
A couple other things I want to point out are, one, I really love the conversation that Martha has with Jor-El. I think that's so cool to see her talk to him, because before this, we'd only ever heard Jonathan talk to Jor-El. So yeah. It was very interesting to hear Martha confront him for the first time.
Yeah.
And even Jonathan and Jor-El's, you know, quote unquote relationship was very rough around the edges, to say the
least. Yes. Oh, yes. Very.
Yeah. I mean, at least Jor-El's like, you know, you did a good job. He did a good job raising my son.
He had very nice things to say to Martha.
Whereas with Jonathan, it was like, listen here, you're not even a sperm donor. Be quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I take the reins of the fatherhood thing. So it was very different tonally in his response to Jonathan and Martha.
That's true.
So yeah.
And I also want to point out Raya, played by Pascal Hutton. This is where we first see her. But Pascal Hutton also was in one of my favorite season 4 episodes, Ageless, and she was the mother of Evan. Who, of course, Clark and Lana sort of take in that episode. So she was the mother who gave birth to Evan.
This is a much better role. I'll say that. That's for sure. And, you know, it was nice to have a connection to Jor-El and how she was, you know, his student or whatever, or partner or whatever the hell she was to Jor-El. And so... that was cool. And then, you know, she comes back later in the season briefly.
Fallout. Yep.
Yeah. So, it was cool seeing her there.
Helps Clark fight Bow Wow.
Yeah. Not that Clark would, in an actual real scenario, nobody would need help in a fight with Bow Wow.
Was possessed by a zoner, so
if only the zoner could actually make him a decent entertainer. Being possessed by a Kryptonian, because he's terrible
in that episode, which we'll talk about.
Well, I disagree, but all right. Yeah.
Anyway, I guess we'll move on to another Clark getting his powers episode, which is Sneeze, which this episode is so funny, basically seeing Clark get overworked to the point where he essentially gets a cold for the first time ever in his life, and that's how he discovers super breath, which just, I mean, this episode is hilarious. Pulls off the park door, falls, and Lois sees it. Oh my goodness!
It actually reminded me of the Perry White episode when the tractor falls.
Yes,
from the
yes, very reminiscent of him.
Yeah, yeah.
So I love that.
I did enjoy this episode, yeah, and you know, the sneeze, like you guys are saying, I think, you know, the excuse that Lois buys is a little bit far fetched, but I'll go with it. It was good. I always like the episode where he gets a power of some sort. They're always solid episodes, mm-hmm. So I enjoy this, and him getting a cold to precipitate, you know, the freeze breath, it makes a sense. Mm-hmm. And to see him navigate that, what normal humans go through all the time is kind of fun and entertaining. So yeah, I enjoyed it. Ryan, anything to add?
No, nothing outside of what, everyone's pretty much said all my thoughts on it.
Cool.
I do enjoy, generally speaking, all the power developing episodes too. I mean, I still say that the best one is how he discovers heat vision.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, that's my favorite as well.
Good God, Krista Allen was fantastic. Oh, my goodness, I wish I had a teacher. Don't get me started with the teacher story again. Go back and listen to that episode.
Well, yeah. In that case, we can move on to Wither, which is Oliver first appeared in Sneeze. But here is where he meets Lois, and there is a hilarious scene where he comes to the Kent farm, and she thinks he's the delivery boy, tying back in with our last piece of news about the delivery boy from episode Idol. But here we get this hilarious scene with Lois, and it's sort of basically this episode is where they develop a relationship. They start a relationship, which she's the second superhero who Lois dates on the show.
I'm telling you, those Justice League meetings are going to be awkward.
but no, that is hilarious, and that scene just cracks me up every time, where Martha comes and tells Lois, and Lois is like, oh boy, that was Oliver Queen, wasn't it? So yeah. That always cracks me up. Justin Hartley as Oliver is just phenomenal. This episode I really like because it's it very much feels like classic Smallville, because this season we get the zoners, and anytime we get a zoner episode, it feels very classic Smallville, like with the meteor freak. And so this felt like very classic Smallville with the park ranger. So I love that about Wither. And then the ending of this episode just makes me cry every single time. Every time it gets me. I love the ending of this episode. First of all, we get another instance of a band appearing on the show, which is the All-American Rejects playing It Ends Tonight, which I love that song. But then we get the ending of the montage, the song Eat by Harrington. So the montage at the end of this episode is just beautiful. And even though it's Lex and Lana together and break my heart, although I will defend the Lex and Lana storyline, because I do think it furthers Lex the villain, and I love how it eventually brings Clark and Lana close together, so we'll get to that. But I love the ending of this episode so much with the song Ache by James Harrington. I think it's beautiful. I think the scene where we see Clark, like everybody else happy together, Lois and Oliver are happy together, and Lex and Lana are happy together. And that's so important. I mean, see where Oliver and Lois are together, again, speaking how amazing Justin Hartley is in the role, and you see the chemistry that he and Erica Durance's Lois have, and the scene where he shoots the arrow, and he pretends to miss. And basically, you see, it's sort of a sacrifice for him to do that. But then you see that really, he did it even better than she ever could have imagined. Because yes, Texas missed the ant, but he hit the, you know, the little top thing. He got it right through. See it there on the wall. So I think it's amazing.
So we all know Smallville has always amazing music. I mean, the music is always amazing. I've talked about it before. I have like a several hours. I think it's over 4 hours Smallville playlist on my phone that I listen to all the time. But if we're ranking the seasons in terms of their, like, if we're ranking the seasons just in terms of the music, season six ranks very near the top for me because, like I said, this episode with It Ends Tonight and then Ache both at the end, and then I'll talk about going forward some other music in the season, but I just adore it. And that ending, I mean, it breaks my heart every single time. But it also, the parts with I guess, Lois and Oliver make me happy. I mean, because those are, because I like Lois and Oliver together, you know, but, you know, it breaks my heart for Clark at the end and, you know, to see Lex and Lana together. Even I love that storyline, but again, as a Klana shipper, breaks my Klana heart. So, but yeah, this episode is definitely one of my favorites of season six.
My thoughts on this are brief, Ryan, so I'll say my piece and then I'll let you chime in.
I'm probably going to be another instance of you guys have already said.
I liked the Oliver Queen stuff. In this episode, the rest of it, I could care less. The villain seemed like a Poison Ivy ripoff of some sort, some weird kind of.
Well, I think it was a nod to Poison Ivy.
Yeah, I think it was a poor imitation. So take the Oliver and Lois stuff, watch it, and then for me, the rest of the episode was just a waste. That's my two cents. Ryan?
I'm going to be a little bit nicer on the... Yeah, it was a reference. Maybe not a reference, but a nod or something to Poison Ivy. Perhaps that's what they were thinking of, trying to give Superman his own Poison Ivy. A little on the forgettable side when it comes to that, but I'm with Adam here again and probably will be for the rest of the season. Oliver just, and anything with Oliver and Justin Hartley is just fantastic to me. Mm-hmm. Can't go wrong with that.
And one more thing I'll point out about this episode is the beginning scene at the very beginning of this episode, more Chloe and Jimmy stuff with them, you know, trying to follow the story, but they're at the makeout point. You know, there's that great scene there where they're like, oh, we should take this slow. And they just start like passionately making out with each other.
My comment as I was watching it was, Jimmy, run. You don't know what you're in for.
You see, you keep bringing that up. And I'm just like, I try when I'm watching Smallville, I just try to, you know.
But unfortunately, I'm not built that way. I can't now. Now that it's out there. Every time I see Allison Mack and she's like either in a relationship or making out with somebody, that's in the back of my head, unfortunately. But it is.
It's in the back of my head, but, and this kind of goes to wider spectrum of actors who their performances and their roles I like and enjoy, but they themselves have been fallen from grace.
Well, here's the thing, too.
I think, like, okay.
If I enjoyed the relationship, maybe that would help. But it's the fact that I don't really care either way that makes it, because I'm not invested. So it's just, where does my mind go? That's where, you know what I'm saying? So if I actually enjoyed the relationship,
would help. Did you ship Chloe and Oliver on Smallville?
Who, me?
Yeah.
That was a good relationship, yeah.
I do too, yeah.
I don't ship them because I don't do that, but I enjoyed their pairing.
I got you. No, I love them together too. I think in terms of all of Chloe's relationships on the show, I think current Jimmy is my favorite, but I definitely like her with Oliver too. I was just curious about that.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I like. Oliver and Chloe better than I do Oliver and Felicity. I'll tell you that right now. But that's another podcast or another episode. But yeah, I guess anything else you want to say, Jordan, about this episode, or are we going to move on from to the next one?
I think we're good. Moving right on to, we've gotten two episodes now of Oliver Queen, but now we get our first episode of actually, well, I guess you could say technically he suits up in Wither because he's got his Robin Hood costume. At the party at the end of that episode, but his first episode in his Green Arrow suit, which is technically the first costumed superhero we have on Smallville. I guess you could technically say that the JSA were before, in terms of what we see on screen, he's the first costumed superhero, even though there were costumed superheroes before him.
Yeah, he's the first one to wear a costume in the show. In the traditional sense.
Yeah, we see. I'm saying the JSA technically in this continuity.
Yeah, but that's not what you're saying. Yeah.
But yeah, in terms of what we see.
Yes.
So yes, we see, in the episode Arrow, we see Green Arrow in action, and it's amazing. Justin Hartley's amazing. The suit's amazing. Everything about it is amazing. And seeing his sort of conflict with Clark as they sort of go back and forth in their different ideologies in terms of heroism, and that great scene at the end where Oliver tells Clark, you know, how he sees things, and Clark is like, I'll never feel that way. But, you know, you can see that they're already starting to develop this mutual respect for one another. I just love it.
I think it's really clear here, more than any other episode of the season, they really wanted to use Batman.
Oh, yeah, you can hear it in the music.
I know. Yeah, it's like, that, and also just the whole dynamic of Clark and Oliver starting here and definitely going forward. I did not see classic Clark and Oliver. I saw Clark and Bruce.
Yeah, oh, definitely. It was a nod to that for sure.
So,
but I love it. Again, I think,
mm-hmm.
you know, Justin, the costume, you know.
Looks
good.
I still like this costume more than the actual, you know, Arrowverse Green Arrow costume.
I agree. Well, which one? Because there's been multiple of those, but I agree with any of them.
What's funny is that the one Arrowverse Green Arrow costume that I like, season 5? It looks like his current one now, but without the sleeves.
That's season 4.
I thought that was season 5. Okay.
The sleeve, when he went sleeveless, that was season 4.
Okay, all right. It's just funny because while that's my favorite of the Arrowverse, when it comes to Oliver's costumes, that's also the one that looks the most like this one too.
And again, playing. You're right, Ryan. It's more because of his demeanor and everything else and his interplay with Clark. It's very Bruce Wayne-ish. But
see, I'm not sure I completely agree with that though, because we see a distinction when Bruce actually does show up in the season 11 comics. There's definitely a difference between.
It's a different medium.
I know, but in the moment.
Yeah.
Because when they were doing season 6, they were not thinking of season 11 comics. I'm saying, like, in the moment, they used Green Arrow because
they couldn't have Batman.
Because it was the closest thing they could get to Batman.
Yeah,
probably.
And so, but even saying that, what I do what I do want to point out about you know, we'll see this later on, but I want to point it out here, is that even though in his early interactions with Clark, it's more, you know, playing to the Bruce Clark dynamic, he does have the classic more jovial Oliver as we go along that we're more familiar with.
Than Stephen Amell.
Yeah.
No, I agree.
So it is there.
The dynamic between Oliver and Clark is very Clark and Bruce to me, but Oliver himself as Green Arrow is how I've always envisioned Green Arrow.
Yeah.
More so than Amell does a fantastic job, but when I think of Green Arrow,
I don't think his version of the character has gotten to that place yet.
I think we've gotten close, and I think we're still on our way there.
Yeah. I think he'll progress to that point.
Yeah. Yeah. When I think of Green Arrow, just kind of more in the abstract as a general thing.
Where's
more Justin Hartley?
And this goes.
I definitely agree with you. Justin's my favorite, and his suit's my favorite too.
So and here's the thing too. Again, it kind of goes back to what I was saying about Tyler Hoechlin's Superman, in that Oliver's come to Metropolis, so he's already the Green Arrow in Star City. Mm-hmm. So he's already a fully formed character, where the one that we're seeing now that Stephen Amell's playing is growing into that, or what we hope is into the quote unquote Green Arrow that we're more familiar with in the comics. So that's the difference, I think, as well.
Another thing I want to point out in this episode is my favorite character, Lana, has one of her best scenes ever, I would say, on Smallville, which is, and this really just shows, Kristen Crook kills it in this scene, just showing how much range she has. I mean, just when you think about this scene compared to, like, Lana and, I don't know, the pilot, I mean, it's just how far this character has come over the course of these six seasons to the place she is now. When she threatens Dr. Grohl, and she, like, blackmails him in the elevator in that scene, she scares the shit out of me in that scene. Like, no joke. And it's like, when you think about Lana, like, in the pilot compared to now, and you see sort of Lex's influence on her, sort of, and, like, some of what, you know, what happened in season 5 sort of has jaded her in a way and has made her a different character than she was before. And this scene is just Kristen Crook killing it.
Mm-hmm. Lex Luthor rubs off on her.
In more ways than one. All right. Okay, next. I don't know. I like the girl next door aspect of Lama. That's my.
Yeah.
Well, I do too. I love that. But I'm just saying, I think she has such an amazing arc, sort of where she gets to this really dark place, and then, you know, she sort of comes back from that too, though. And in season 7, and then moving on, when she becomes a superhero in her own right, in season 8, and then into the season 11 comics too. I love that. Moving on, another favorite episode of mine is Reunion. I love any episode where we get so much insight into Lex's past. I just absolutely adore, like, you think of Memoria from season 3, and then Reunion is another example of this, seeing young
Memoria,
Lex.
Memorial was the one with he has the flashbacks of childhood and his brother.
Yes,
correct.
With the greatest acting performance I've ever seen in anything.
Okay, because if that's the episode I'm thinking of, the first time watching it when I was finally got all the box sets and everything, it probably didn't help that I ended up watching the episode at like 4 a.m. and I was like really tired, but I remember being so emotional and like almost borderline crying.
Oh, I was. I do. Every time I watch that episode, I cry during that final. Like, it's the greatest acting performance I've ever seen. The last one. It's incredible. But Reunion is another amazing Lex episode. You know, going back to his childhood, or he's older here, but you know, still his youth anyway. And he's played by Lucas Grabeel here, who later plays Superboy. Which, I mean, it's not an actor playing two different roles exactly, because they wanted him to play Superboy simply for the fact that Superboy was, I mean, it was a Lex clone, so it makes sense that it would be, you know, look like him, but I just point that out. But I love this episode.
Oh my god, I never put two and two together of him.
Oh, yep.
I didn't know that it was the same kid.
Oh my God, I never.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
This is the benefit of having Jordan as a co-host. He can pull this crap out of thin air, whereas I don't know.
Thank you, Adam. You know,
that was meant as a compliment.
Quite the compliment. Yeah. No, I mean that.
I'm jealous of your memory, Jordan. I'm just letting you know that.
No, I actually don't want to remember this stuff. I said too much stuff in my head.
Whereas I do want to remember this stuff, but it's just like how I was saying on the pre-show chat that, you know, binge watching all these episodes back to back to back in such quick rapid succession, it's like a lot of stuff just kind of melds all into one, or I drop stuff even though I just saw it hours ago. Or
I got you.
Memory sucks. I'm getting old.
You're probably younger than me.
This episode reunion. I want to point out, written by another Stephen S. DeKnight written episode, and directed by Supergirl director and somebody who's directed a lot of Smallville episodes, Jeannot Swark, we've talked about many times in the show. So, but anyway, getting this insight into Lex's history, and first of all, this makes out, like, it is, I remember watching this episode for the first time, and, I mean, just, Oliver is a, I love Oliver on this show, and I love, you know, where he ends up. Obviously, he's a good person by the end of things. But Oliver in this episode is a terrible person.
Yeah.
And I remember watching it for the first time and just wanting, like, I wanted Oliver to get everything that was coming to him. Like, you simplify, first of all, you start out sympathizing with Lex, but then you wind up turning on Lex, too, because of what he does to Duncan. And it's just like, I mean, what he does, I mean, it is atrocious what Lex does in this episode, but you see this darkness that's in him from such a young age, and you see that it was always there. And even though it didn't always manifest itself, you know, you see different parts of it. There's a scene in season 2 where Lex takes the golf club to the meter maid's car. And so even before he gets to the point where he is, like in season 6, where he's a true villain, you see instances where the darkness rises out of Lex, and you see it all the way back to when he was in high school in this episode. And you see, I mean, there's one line in this episode that's really powerful, I think. Where Lana asks Lex, she's asking him about these other guys that he was going to school with, and she's like, she's asking him like, oh, were they your friends or not? And he goes, I only had one friend in school, and it sure as hell wasn't him. And so, like, going back to Duncan, and so, like, Lex does regret what he did to Duncan, but it's like, at the same time, it's like, you, what he did was awful. And I mean, you know, you see Oliver, he's in a very different place now, where he obviously regrets what happened to, but just like, I mean, just the darkness, like, again, just going back to what this show does, what all of Smallville does with Lex Luthor, with the complexity of Lex's character, is absolutely brilliant. It's why Michael Rosenbaum's version of the character is hands down the greatest Lex ever, and I'm gonna go ahead and say it, he's the greatest live action villain of all time. And what this show does with him, I mean, the progression there, and when they show insights into his past, it's absolutely brilliant. And this episode is just an amazing example of that.
Well, I'll disagree with the last part you said, greatest villain of all time. But everything else you said about the episode and the performances, I'll agree with.
Would you say one of, at least?
No, I agree with you, one of. I just don't think he's the best villain of all time.
Well, he is, but I'll take it if you agree with me on one of.
I'm definitely in the one of category. I can't even really personally pick who I would choose as the best villain. I know that
well,
what you said.
Michael Rosenbaum's legs.
I can tell you who it is.
Who? I don't know. No, Adam. Who do you think?
The greatest villain performance of all time.
Yeah.
Heath Ledger.
And it's okay.
I think he's number two for me. Rosenbaum's Lex.
He's definitely in the top five.
How can you vote for a guy that won an Oscar over a guy that I've never seen an Oscar?
When I personally think of Joker, I don't usually think of Ledger's version.
You think of Jack Nicholson?
I think my
Cesar Romero.
I'm Mark Hamill.
Oh yeah.
Mark Hamill, whether it's the Batman animated series or more specifically the Arkham games, that's when I think Joker, that's who I think of. That's who I think of.
Yeah.
Rosenbaum couldn't have won an Oscar because he wasn't in a film. Adam.
But Heath Ledger.
Ledger's Joker.
If you compare the two performances, Ledger's is better.
You see, I disagree. Listen, Ledger, I'm not going to argue this too hard on this because, like I said, Ledger's number two for me in terms of all of live action villain performances. But
and Ledger, Ledger did.
I'm sorry. Okay. I think Rosamund's better.
Ledger did that in two. Ledger did what he did in 2.5 hours. He didn't have eight. How long was Lex on the show? 7 seasons to do that.
Okay, even if you take just 2.5 hours of Rosamund's Lex, I still think I'm still taking him.
Yeah, but you'll take anything Smallville. Let's be honest. Your go-to is Smallville for everything. So
it's my favorite depiction of the DC universe ever.
You can't deny that you have a heavy bias towards anything Smallville. So that clouds your judgment. That influences your decision making. Yeah.
But we're all influenced by what we like.
Yeah,
I mean,
there are people.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying.
Yeah, there are people that are going to think that Gene Hackman is the best, or that when it comes to Lex Luthor's, or that.
Well, here's where I'll challenge them. If anybody says Gene Hackman is the greatest villain based on his Lex Luthor of all time on screen, I'm going to vehemently disagree with that, because there are so many other movies and non-superhero where the villain is actually far more threatening than what Hackman did. So that's where I'll fight. Like, Superman the movie could be somebody's favorite movie, but to say that, that's stretching it. Like, Jordan, I could see, because I actually like Rosenbaum's Lex a lot. Mm-hmm.
No, I'm just saying that there are people out there that do think that, that probably do think that.
Well, if they do, they need to watch more movies with more villains.
One more thing I want to point out about Reunion, and then I want to get your guys' thoughts on it, because you guys have spoken about Reunion, is that we get a mention of Gotham City in this episode,
which is
really cool.
I like I said, I pretty much agree with mostly everything you said about the episode, so mm-hmm. There's not much more that I can expand on.
Unfortunately, kind of the same here with me. I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. It's all good. Well,
I'll have a lot more to say when it comes to the Justice League episode. Don't you worry.
All right. Well, that's 5 episodes away at this point, so we're chugging along to that. Next up, though, we've got an episode that, from the sounds of it, Adam is not as fond of as I am, but I love it, and that's the Bow Wow episode, Fallout, where we get Raya's return, we get Bow Wow possessed by a zoner, and I absolutely love this episode.
I like the fact that Raya returned, and there were scenes in the fortress.
Yeah.
And that's the end of it.
I don't know how you don't like Bow Wow.
He sucks. He sucks as an actor. He's simple.
Oh my goodness.
About his music?
His music is terrible too. I hate it.
He's like, I find him like when he comes after Clark and this, and he's like Kal-El, and he's like coming after him. Oh, I find him really scary in this episode.
Well, I find it scary that an actual casting director chose him to play anything.
Well, what I love what they did with the zoners this season is a lot of them are stunt casting. I think it's so cool. Like, you get Bow Wow for one.
I'm great with stunt casting. Just stunt cast the right people.
You get Batista for one of them.
That's another. Just wait till we get there. Oh, you think Bow Wow was bad? Just wait till we get there.
Oh.
Wait, you don't like him?
I will fight you with Batista because I love him.
Well, you can fight me. I just wait till we get there.
It's hey Ryan, I've got your back on this.
Oh, thank you.
You know, basically, you know, though, if anybody ever says something positive about Smallville and anybody fights them on it, I've got their back. So that's a given, pretty much.
Well, that's like saying
yes, I've got your back.
That's like saying, how can I put this delicately? That's like saying, well, okay, I lost the analogy, whatever, but yeah, anyway. Okay, so those are my thoughts on the episode. I said it. Ryan, chime in.
I don't really have that much either. It was a pleasure to me to see more Raya, because I really was intrigued by her when we first got introduced to her in the episode Zod, because she was, you know, a connecting link for him back to Krypton that also wasn't trying to kill Clark all the time.
Yeah, like Clark had another Kryptonian to hang around with. And,
and that's what he talks about this episode, that he doesn't feel alone anymore.
Yeah.
I really thought that was powerful. And, I mean, it goes back to sort of a theme this season, is Clark does feel alone, you know, with Lana being with Lex. I mean, we talk about the scene at the end of Wither with him in the loft. And so, yeah, it ties in with that.
Yeah. I know. So that part of it was great. It was just everything else.
Well, moving on to an episode that I know you're a lot more positive on, Adam, because I know we've talked about this one, which is Smallville's Thanksgiving episode, which I'm going to say it right now, Adam. We're doing a full review of this episode for Thanksgiving this year, which is Rage. And, Adam, this I think we're going to agree on, because I adore this episode.
Yeah, it's great. First,
it's a very Green Arrow-centric episode,
which
is cool. I really love that about it, and I mean, seeing a really cool Oliver Lex confrontation in this episode. But probably my favorite part of this entire episode is the beautiful Thanksgiving montage at the end of this episode, where first of all, Lois and Oliver sort of make up after what happened this episode. You know, where she thought he was on drugs and everything, which well, technically was. She was right about that.
Yeah.
But anyway, but that beautiful montage, and again, going back to the music this season, the song Cain and Abel by Josh Kelly. Obviously, I've got it on my Smallville playlist. I literally, like, I can, even without watching the episode, I put this song on and my eyes well up with tears, because it just makes me think of the scene. And it just, it's so beautiful seeing, the Kents together, Clark talking about Jonathan, saying what they're thankful for, and, you know, he's carrying on that tradition, seeing everybody happy together, you know, Chloe, Lois, Oliver, Martha. But then when it cuts over to the Luther mansion, you see this incredibly cold, incredibly distant, like not loving at all Thanksgiving dinner that Lex and Lana are having, and just the contrast between this versus that. I think it's really poignant, showing the difference between how the Kents do things versus how the Luthers do things. And I think that's just incredible. And, you know, just there's something like, you know, I love all the holiday episodes of pretty much anything. Like, holiday episodes of anything tend to be my favorite episodes. Like, Comfort and Joy is my favorite Justice League episode. And Smallville is some of my favorite episodes. Lexmas is one of my favorite Smallville episodes.
I'm thinking to myself, like, Lexmas, because I was trying to, like,
Lexmas, then next season we get Gemini, another Christmas episode. We get Thirst, which everybody knows Thirst is one of my top three Smallville episodes, the Halloween episode. And then this Thanksgiving episode is one of my favorite episodes of season 6. So I just adore holiday episodes of pretty much anything, but Smallville killed it. I mean, I just have to say they killed it with their holiday episodes, all of them. And this Thanksgiving one is so it's amazing. It's so heartwarming. I was for a really great Green Arrow centric episode. So
yeah. I like about obviously the holiday stuff, and you know, like we mentioned, the contrast between the Kents and the Luthers was cool, but like,
and his song, not amazing.
Yeah, it's a good song. The stuff with Oliver, I think, is interesting because, you know, it's in a way, in its own way, tackling drug use, right? In this case, performance enhancing, right?
Perhaps kind of nod thing. To Speedy in the comics, actually.
Yeah, which is a nod to stuff that, which is a nod to piece.
Because wasn't there like a run of the in the comics where Green Arrow had to deal with drug addicts?
Roy is addicted.
Yeah, and so. It was small writing to that, and I thought it was a nice nod, a nice pull, and it was very well, and it made sense because Oliver would want to, or not want to, but be more predisposed to taking something like that allows him to heal, you know, quicker and stuff, because he's, you know, the fact is he's only human, right? So, and doing that job, doing the vigilante kind of thing, the superhero kind of thing. When you're human, you know, chances are, if we're looking at it in a realistic point of view, there are going to be nights where you're going to get, you know, injured and sometimes mortally wounded. So it made sense for him to want to take something like that. So yeah, I really, I really, really thought this was a strong episode.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorites. Yeah.
All right.
Of the season. Ryan, anything else you want to add?
I definitely agree with you on really liking how they, you know, tackled, you know, drug use, drug addiction. Hmm. I, you know, understand why Oliver felt like he would be compelled to have to. Because, you know, Oliver's, you know, a simple human working in a world full of, you know, emerging metas, and he would, you know, probably at least at some point during his career as Green Arrow would want to try and operate on their level if possible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, right. whenever Thanksgiving involved, I always get hungry. So.
Oh, I was hungry looking at it. Yeah. I was like, damn it, I want to eat.
Hey, nothing makes me more hungry this season, though, than Bart cleaning Martha's table in Justice, when he just wipes the table clean, and Martha's like, where do you put it all? And I think I talked about this actually. When did I talk about this? I've talked about this on the show before. I think in relation to Bart, maybe with our season 4 review.
No, I think it was Barry in Justice League, because you said something about Snack Hole.
Oh, Barry in Justice. Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, it goes for Barry in Justice League too. It goes with Bart on Smallville. I relate to speedsters in the fact that they eat so much because I eat like that, and so like it. Not only does it always make me hungry when I see that happen. But
Jordan, do you carry around entire pizzas inside really nice cars? driven by billionaires.
Technically, well, I don't know how nice my car. The answer is yes. I've eaten in a car.
I've eaten in my car all the time.
My car is not that nice, but other than that, yes.
I've eaten pizza slices in a car, but never.
The one place I eat more than anywhere else when there's not a DC promotion at a fast food restaurant is, I don't know if you guys have these in where you guys are, but Little Caesars, where you can get
Little Caesars up here.
Where you get an entire large pizza for $6. So I get the entire pizza, I get it, I put it in my car, I get 2 garlic cups, pour the garlic cups all over it, and devour it in about 20 minutes in my car. So, yes, I do exactly what Barry
does. I think I just gained 20 pounds listening to
that. We've just covered the gap. Like, in this episode, think about it. In this episode, we've talked about McDonald's, Burger King, Little Caesars. We've covered 3 days of the week of Jordan's dietary, you know. So, if anybody wanted to know about Jordan's, you know, diet, there you go.
I eat a ton. So, anyway, I very much relate to Bart. But I guess, are we ready to move on to the next episode?
Yeah, unless you want to tell us about what your breakfast habits are.
Well, my breakfast habits used to be those Batman v Superman cereals, but now they don't make those anymore.
And it's just going to cry because I miss those cereals so much.
I miss them so much, too.
So if they my question is, see, they should make fishy snacks in relation to Aquaman, the movie.
They should make what?
Like fish snacks,
a promotion with goldfish.
Yeah, you know how they have fish. No, you know they have the fish crackers.
They should, yeah.
They should have. They can call them Mantos Munchables.
to quote Aquaman in the episode Justice that we're about to talk about.
It's fish jokes. I always get fish jokes.
Yeah,
fish jokes.
But come on, that's a cool name, Mantos Munchables. Get on that, somebody get.
And I'd buy them all.
Of course you would, but somebody get on that.
Anyway, so this episode's static. I love this episode. I think it's really just the concept of somebody being locked on a different frequency. I think it's really cool. Jimmy really gets to shine because he's the one who's like, I love it. It's just adding more personality to Jimmy's character. Like, he's like sort of a CB radio nerd. I thought that was so cool. Again, I love this version of Jimmy so much. So I love that he's the one who sort of is really, he saves day in a big way in this episode. I love that. Even though it's not Phil Morris playing the role in this episode,
I was just gonna bring up why you know, the one moment I like from this episode is without, you know, they don't even say it in the episode or even credit anyone, but the debut of Martian Manhunter.
Martian Manhunter, and I know, making me hungry again with the Oreo that he leaves behind.
Yeah.
But yes, because he comes and saves Clark from Batista. This is the Batista episode, yes, yeah. Which is interesting because it's a very unique episode where we get Clark sort of on his own because he goes to Seattle in this episode, and you've got nobody else is with him. And there is a pretty funny scene where he goes into that place where they're like dealing with the bodies, and he's like he zooms off, and she and the woman there, she because he pretends to be like an intern or whatever, and she thinks he's like vomiting. So anyway, I thought that seemed kind of funny, but like really, Batista is like one of the most gruesome villains that's in Smallville history. Like I get like I look at like I don't get like actively like nauseous when I see what he's doing, but like it is really gross. It is really gross.
It just overall cool to see Drax the Destroyer do DC first.
Yeah, you know, everyone knows him as Drax and, you know, wrestler, but as a zoner.
Hey, I know him as a zoner. I know him as a zoner primarily. That's what I think of him as. And, you know, actually, speaking of his powers, though, they remind me a little bit of actually Jody Melville's powers.
Yeah, that's Amy Adams' character.
That's Amy Adams' character from Craven.
When she played the
when she sucked, like when she well.
When at first she was overweight and she used to eat. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She would like suck the fat out of animals.
I'm sure Amy Adams is glad to be in a different corner of the Superman universe after that episode. But
I'm sure she is. How happy she must be to be in a different.
Then again, she watched the opening of Justice League and saw the CGI and said, maybe not. But
that's still Jody Melville is still my favorite Amy Adams role, as much as I love her as Lois Lane.
Well, you have issues, but that's besides the point.
Be nice.
But how can you vote that over her Lois Lane performance? I'll never know. But anyway,
I am curious about that, Jordan. What the hell?
Well,
I mean, there's loving Smallville, but then there's ridiculousness, and that small, choosing that.
There's only one word answer I have to that.
Okay.
Smallville.
Yeah. Anyway.
All right. I think Adam, you have your answer.
Anyway, here's my point. Here's my point on this episode. I hated it.
Heat and Smallville should never be in the same sentence.
Well, in your world they're not, but in my world it's a fact, unfortunately. I would love to love every episode like you. I just don't.
There's nothing I hate about Smallville. I will never go that far, but there are definitely characters and concepts
like this episode. Like I started, I got halfway through, and then I had it on. I kept it on, so I didn't turn it off. So there's a plus in its direction. I didn't turn it off like a half of the season four episodes, but I enjoy Dave Bautista in the first Guardians movie.
Mm-hmm.
His performance here is horrendous.
This was many years before.
Hold on. Oh yeah, but hold on a second. Okay. I'm driving at something here. Like Tom Welling look like Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight by standing next to Dave Bautista. Like I said, he was terrible here. I enjoy him to a degree in the first Guardians, but here's my thing about Dave Bautista. Like I'm gonna go off on a slight semi tangent here.
The train's joining in.
Oh well, even the train doesn't like his performance in this episode. See. His train is the sound of the expletives that I won't say because I can't on this show.
The train is bleeping you out.
Right, exactly. but so he's if you're following Dave Bautista now, he's taken a very hard stance on the firing of James Gunn, and I respect him sticking up for his friend and the person that gave him his really big break in Hollywood.
Yeah.
But here's the thing about Dave Bautista. And as much as I enjoyed, I'm not over the moon about it, but I enjoyed him in the first Guardians. I love the movie, but I just kind of enjoyed his part. But here's the thing. Disney/Marvel can go to Vince McMahon tomorrow and say, we need a roided up, one of your roided up wrestlers, so we can paint him in green and have him make jokes cackle laughing and demean, sexually demean either Gamora or whatever the praying mantis character was.
Just mantis.
Yeah, whatever the hell name was. But anyway, so those roles, like everybody says, he's great in Guardians of the Galaxy. Let's be honest. Any wrestler painted green could do that role. It's not. So his acting is very limited. So my thing is, the whole, as I was watching this episode, Batista was going nuts on Twitter saying, I'm going to quit this, or it's nauseating working for Disney, and if they don't use this, I'm out. And it's like, and as I'm watching this, I'm like, who are you to make demands? Like, he's burnt bridges with Vince McMahon, so he can't crawl back to wrestling. He's burning bridges with Disney. His work on Smallville isn't anything to write home about. He was the weakest James Bond villain I've ever seen. And I fell asleep during Blade Runner 2049, but the performance that he gave was less than mediocre. So the guy is just not in a position of bargaining if he wants to keep a career going. And to me, he was terrible. Like I said, Tom Welling looked like a five-time Academy Award winner in the scenes that he shared with Batista. It was terrible. And the whole premise of the episode, just to me, it was a waste. But I did like the Oreo cookie thing. I will say that.
Anyway, moving on to another episode that I adore, which is Subterranean. Which this is another episode, sort of like Wither, that I feel like is classic Smallville. Like, I always love episodes, I've talked about this before, that really focus on the small town aspects of Smallville. And this is a great example of this. You know, just focus on a farm, an adjacent farm to the Kent farm, Jed McNally's farm. And I really like that about this episode, that it really focuses in on the small town aspects of Smallville, you know, the farming town. It's written by Caroline Dries, who is going to be working on Batwoman, and wrote a ton of amazing episodes of Smallville. I really like this episode. In terms of, it's another episode of seeing Clark sort of be like an older brother figure to a kid, like we talked about with Ryan, like we talked about with Evan, like we talked about in the season 5 episode Fragile. It's another example of that here. I really like that about this episode. And
again, this episode did absolutely nothing for me. If I want to see an episode where Clark is a big brother, I'll just rewatch Ryan and the episodes that he was in. I didn't care at all for these episodes or this episode.
I mean, I generally speaking, I do like episodes like this, but yeah, the Ryan ones are a little bit more. Those actually like hit me in the feels, I guess.
Yeah. Who can say.
Yeah. Those just to me stand out more.
Yeah.
Not that I thought that this was bad itself. It's just I have a preference to whenever Ryan would show up.
Oh yeah, well the Ryan episodes are amazing. I love all the other instances of it too. But
it paves the way to Connell.
I will say this: whatever anybody does, do not show this episode to Donald Trump, because it talks about immigration and all that, and it may get him going nuts about it all again. So let's keep this episode away from him and keep him focusing on. Actually, don't show him Justice, or don't show him anything with Martian Manhunter either, because then he'll start with the Space Force. So don't show him any of the episodes in the season.
Just don't even show him anything from this series, because he'll be like, that Lex Luthor guy, he has great ideas, the best ideas.
He might want to hire him, which Michael Rosenbaum might, I don't know.
Comparing Trump to Lex Luthor is an insult to Lex
Luthor. I would have this version of Lex Luthor as president any day of the week.
I would.
And I'm not even American. That's the best part.
I would have Lex Luthor present than this, because at least Lex Luthor isn't. He's smart. At least Lex Luthor's smart.
There is the intelligence factor. Yeah. that's important. Subterranean is subpar for me. Anything else, Ryan?
I've said my piece on this one.
All right, good, cool.
Well, moving on to Hydro, which is another Green Arrow-centric episode and another Tom Welling-directed episode. I think another, because we talked about his directorial debut on our last in season five, so and we haven't talked about any.
Which one from season five did he direct again?
He directed Fragile.
Okay, alrighty. That was his first, okay.
Yeah, so then, but he comes back and directs this one as well. He directs several throughout the rest of the show's run, but this is his next. This is his second one. Another Green Arrow-centric episode, which it includes that hilarious scene of Lois thinking she kisses Green Arrow, and she basically, it's really Clark under there. And there's that hilarious scene where, like, Chloe has, and then afterwards, Chloe has Clark, basically, she realizes it's not Oliver, that she slaps him in the face, and then there's that scene where Chloe brings Clark, and she's like, how did you, she asked Lois, she's like, how did you know that, and, you know, Chloe's trying to play this, like, for Clark, so that Clark hears, because Chloe knows that Clark is in a dark place right now, because, you know, he feels really sad about Lana being with Lex, and so Chloe tries to cheer him up in this hilarious way, which I just love, and it's just Chloe being a great friend to Clark there, which is where she basically says to Lois, she's like, Lois, why don't you tell Clark how you knew that it wasn't really Oliver there under the Green Arrow mask, and she goes, you know, Ollie's a great kisser, but he's got nothing on this Green Arrow, and so, you know, that cheered Clark up, so I thought that was just hilarious, and a really nice scene of Chloe, you know, trying to pick her friend up there. So I love that about this episode. Linda Lake as sort of the, I guess we'll call her a villain. She is a villain.
It's a throwback to villain of the week thing, which is this kind of random person that has these abilities.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, but she's one, if we're talking about, she's one who returns. Which is cool. She has cool powers, first of all, but also I think she's really entertaining in the role. This really, like, this journalist that has just completely gone over the edge and there's no line she won't cross. So I love that about this episode and another thing that I love about this episode is Lana saying that she wouldn't have hesitated to say yes when she was with Clark, which just makes me think back to Reckoning, where she did say yes, and oh my goodness, it makes me sad, but it also makes me kind of happy.
I liked the Clark and Oliver bait and switch to throw Lois off. That was cool. In fact, that was the best part of the episode for me, that whole portion of it. But the Linda Lake stuff was garbage. I hated the Freak of the Week aspect of it. We may have even seen a water hydro-based villain before. And if I'm remembering correctly, that's sort of recycling old plot lines. And again, they managed to get, again, stunt casting, but they cast one of the worst actresses on Beverly Hills 90210. How they managed to do that, I'll never know. Here we are. Aside from the Oliver, Clark, and Lois stuff, another forgettable filler episode for season six. Ryan?
Not to me, I think Tori Spelling as Linda kind of stands out a little bit more. Maybe because it is the over-exaggeration that she does with the characterization. She plays it a little bit more.
Yeah, and that's like, part of the part that,
she definitely, most likely not, but paid attention to Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy.
Probably, yeah. It's
I just had those kind of flashbacks watching her chew up the scenery, but not saying that she was great in it, but, you know, stands out in my memory more than a lot of other things.
Yeah.
All right. For good or for bad, however you want to take it.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Well, I think we're all gonna agree on the next episode, which
I guess
Justice, written and directed by Stephen S. DeKnight, and we got the Justice League, baby. We got the Justice League.
It's about time.
Yeah, TV did it first, so Warner Brothers Film Group, shame on you.
Technically, this wasn't even the first TV instance, because there was that 1997 pilot.
Yeah, but we're not going to talk about that. You know what? Hold on a second.
We don't talk about.
Wait a minute, though. Here's the good thing. If you don't like the lip CGI at the beginning of Justice League, the movie, check that out on YouTube, and that'll look like $100,000 by comparison. I love this episode.
I'm sorry, I keep interrupting. Go ahead.
No, go. I mean,
I was just going to say that to me, this is one of the best episodes of the entire show for me. Because it's the formation of the Justice League.
The way they all interacted.
And to see how they brought back Bart and Arthur and Victor.
Bart's first appearance when he saves Chloe, I love that. It's just awesome. Mm-hmm. And like I was saying, I brought up the scene with Bart earlier. I love Kyle Gallner's Bart so much. And like the scene where he's like eating, Martha's like, "It's nice to have you back here, Bart. You're welcome anytime. But where do you put all that food?" And he's like eating the whole kitchen table, and just everything about his personality. I think about this when we talked about Run, but just everything about his personality I love. You know, he's talking to Clark, he's like, "Let's go down to Mexico together, amigo. Let's get this El Intestino Buster burrito."
which then just made me hungry for burritos after watching.
It did me too. Yep.
one of the cool things I found was that usually when a character disappears, you know, off a show for a while, they never really explain where he's been. And there were a few episodes that Oliver wasn't in, but where he was on missions with Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that they gave us that explanation. And also how being with the group kind of sort of urged Clark to start thinking more globally in terms of his heroism, as opposed to just localized to Smallville, Metropolis, and the people he cares about, right?
Yeah, he says he's going to do that. He's like, "I need to take care of these zoners first." But then, you know, he's saying, like, and that's something that Oliver was sort of trying to preach to him this season, was like, you know, "It's great. I respect what you're doing here in Smallville with the people around you and helping them, but there's a whole world out there that needs saving that you can help." And, I like that. So.
And I think this was the episode where Oliver confronts Lex and shoots the arrow, right? And then it nicks him in the face.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. That was a cool moment.
And then one of the best Lex lines of the entire series, which is, "And I want a ponytail."
Yeah, that was fun. I will say that was funny.
You said that to Bart. Oh my goodness.
That was funny. And then the part at the end where they're deciding to blow up the warehouse, right?
Which really should be like my wallpaper background of the Justice League walking away.
No, but then it's
our banner on our Podbean page.
Nice.
The cool thing about that was that Clark double checked and he said, "Are you sure everybody's clear?"
Yeah.
That was awesome because
Superman. That is such a Superman thing.
It's a total Superman thing. So then the music, the score, I should say, not the music, because the music denotes musical, you know, like song. But the score, as they were walking away in that slow-mo and then the close-up kind of
thing. Mark Snow.
That was awesome, awesome stuff. What an episode. This was fantastic.
And then Chloe's line at the end, "You've got some amazing friends, Clark."
Yeah, I wish you would have said Super Friends, because amazing.
Oh my God, yes, please.
Amazing to me denotes Spider-Man, and I'm like, oh, what is that stupid? Yeah. Couldn't one of the writers have said Super Friends? Like, come on. It's a writer's room, and the best thing they could come up with was amazing. Like, seriously?
When you have in your own history, comic book history, Super Friends.
Yeah, I mean, I would have used it. I would have gone full out, yeah.
Oh my God.
But aside from that, amazing episode. Just fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I love the banter back and forth between Cyborg and Aquaman.
Yeah.
And also, let's just I know that we've had discussions like this in our own like private group chats and whatnot, but I really do like, I've grown more appreciative, I should say, of Cyborg being a member of the Justice League. And that didn't start with the movie. That didn't start with the New 52. It began here. 2006 is the first time that they ever had Cyborg be a founding member of the Justice League.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
All right. Well, moving on to my personal favorite season 6 episode, which is Labyrinth. My goodness, guys. I adore this episode. This episode blew my freaking mind the first time I saw it. It is a psychological thriller. It's essentially, I know there's a theory that's gone on for a long time, like a fan theory about Batman that like, oh, what if he's like schizophrenic and everything he's, you know, all the villains, it's just a way of him dealing with the trauma of losing his parents. And that's basically what they do here with Superman. I should say with Batman, there's even a fan film I saw recently at Atlanta Comic called Batman Patient Zero that explores that idea in much a similar way.
Is it as gross as the Joker one you made me watch?
No, it's not. Okay. Like that.
Okay, thank God.
Did you get a chance to check that out, Adam? Yet?
Yeah, that's disturbing.
But it's amazing.
I wanted to shower after it.
Okay, it's pretty amazing, though, is it not?
No, it's very well done. It's very well done.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, so you're welcome for sharing that with you guys.
That's the one reference. Listen, I think you get a lot of movie references but that are off the wall, and I've never heard of them. But this is one reference that I say, well done.
What's that?
Yeah. I just complimented you, and you missed the compliment. No, I'm not going to do it anymore. Continue. Carry on.
You
missed the chance.
I
am not going to repeat
you, but
it.
I couldn't tell what you were. I couldn't tell what you were saying. Anyway,
I complimented your recommendation. Is what I did.
Oh, thank you very much, Adam.
I said most of the other. Well, now I'll do it because what the hell? You brought it back up. I said most of the other movie recommendations you throw out, I've never heard of or seen these movies. But this I'm actually glad I went and watched. So good, yeah.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it. But anyway, getting back to Labyrinth, my goodness, this episode is just, it's okay, first of all, it's terrifying. And what I love about it so much is, and what makes it so terrifying, is the plausibility of it. Everything checks out. Like, you could believe that this was, like, this could be an alternate universe take on Superman. Like, this could be real. Like, it's totally plausible that he could have had this trauma where he basically invented all this, and you see it, like, he's, like, the people, like, all the people in his life, like, Oliver Queen is one of the employees at this asylum. It's very similar, actually, to what happened in the episode Visitor in season 2 with Cyrus. And it's sort of similar to what happened with him, where he created this idea that he was an alien in his head to cope with the trauma of losing his parents in the meteor shower. So it's similar to that. And so anyway, it's terrifying. It's like a psychological thriller and a great one. And, well, okay, first of all, I'll mention Martian Manhunter is in it and has an amazing role in it. And this is the first time we really see Phil Morris. Like, this is the first time Phil Morris is actually in the role. Obviously, we saw the cameo of Martian Manhunter earlier. But for me, the highlight of this episode is the Klonoa stuff. Oh my goodness, I love it so much. Okay, obviously we know this season is, for a lot of the season, Clark and Lana are not together. And that's, I mean,
hooray!
Don't you dare, Adam. It's difficult for me to see my OTP apart like that, but it... First of all, what I love in this episode is in this, sort of like in Relic in season 3 when Clark and Lana weren't together, and we got, you know, sort of an alternate Klonoa story, an alternate universe Klonoa story. It's the same thing here where they're sort of, they're together briefly in Clark's vision that the Zoner is giving him. But the scene that makes me cry every time is the scene at the end in the Talon, once Clark's come out of his vision, and he sees Lana, and he's there with her, and he tells her about his dream, and he says, I had a dream that I gave you a ring. It was at Quinn's Market, and we were kids, and he's like, we were 6 years old or whatever, and she goes, what was the occasion? And or she goes, what was the occasion? And he goes, it was an engagement ring. And she just said, she said, and then she says, what happens next? And he says, I woke up. And it just, it's so beautiful. It's so powerful. It's, it makes me so sad, but it also makes me like so happy because like, oh my goodness, you can still see how much they love each other. And it calls back to an earlier scene this season, actually, which I forgot to mention, but there's a scene where Clark goes into Luther Mansion and sees Lana there. And Lana asks him, do you ever wish that you could go back and everything would be different? And he says, every day. And it just, it's this idea that he regrets so much what he did in Hypnotic in season 5 when he told Lana he didn't love her to try and protect her after what happened in Reckoning when, yes, he did go back in time to try to change things. And, well, we saw what happened there. But
nice one, Clark.
It's so heartbreaking, but it's so beautiful as a Klonis shipper to see these moments in season 6 where even though they're not together, you see how much love they still have for one another. And obviously, we know they do get back together later, but I mean that scene is so powerful, and it just makes me call back like the history of Clark and Lana and just things like that. Like both those scenes that I just mentioned, not the one in this episode, the one that I mentioned from before earlier this season at the Luther Mansion, just makes me think back. Like I think back to the pilot. I think back to the scene that made me truly fall in love with Smallville in the pilot the very first time I watched it, which is Clark imagining dancing with Lana to the song Everything, and just thinking back to how much things have changed at this point in season 6 and, you know, how far gone things have gone with their relationship. And just, I mean, it's devastating. It's heartbreaking as a diehard Klonis shipper, but I mean, oh man, there's something so beautiful about it too. So beautiful about that scene with Clark and Lana at the Talon in this episode that I just adore.
I like the stuff, the nightmare sequence where he's in the asylum and all the, like all the stuff that, you know, Krypton, Jor-El, all that stuff is essentially, stuff around the asylum.
Mm-hmm.
That, like you were saying, that is cool because it's very plausible that that could be the case.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I really, really like that stuff. That part of the episode was great. And Martian Manhunter, again, his first appearance. And again, I knew your father. Everybody knew Jor-El.
Everyone knows Jor-El.
He's apparently a lot nicer in person than he is in holographic talking voice.
There's an alternate version of the crypto script where Shelby knew Jor-El.
Oh, I wish they could have done that. Where, if can you imagine if Martian Manhunter could do like a Spock mind meld with the dog, and the dog is like, I knew Jor-El, you know.
But Shelby cool. wasn't but, from Krypton.
I know.
We're just hypothesis. You know, it would be cool. Why not? Like, at this point, who cares? Everybody else knows Jor-El. right. So no, but I that was cool, and sort of how, you know, Martian Manhunter comes to the rescue. And then later on, and I think it's in another season, Clark will save Martian Manhunter. So that's kind of cool. But yeah, so all that aspect of that of the episode, the asylum stuff, and that was great and really strong stuff. It's kind of like a horrific.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a horrific version of Inception in a way.
I never put that together. Okay.
Kind of, sort of.
Yeah.
It is a horror themed episode. I mean, like I was saying before, it does feel that way. Yeah.
Well, it's more suspense than horror.
I described it as a psychological thriller, I think, which is the best way to describe it.
Which would probably still categorize in the grand scheme of things as suspense. But yeah. But I enjoyed the episode. Yeah. Ryan.
I overall enjoyed it too. Like, you know, you guys are always taking my talking points, so.
Well, come up with other ones, damn it.
So I
think on the fly. What do you think?
watching this now with a little bit of hindsight, it made me think, actually, the whole twist of everything with, you know, the asylum and that it's just, you know, things that he's been imagining. It brings to mind a
relatively recent British horror movie called Ghost Stories, where, you know, it starts off with, you know, this guy investigating three cases of the supernatural and the paranormal, and then, spoiler alert, finds out that he's been in a coma at a hospital. Oh. And everyone who's been in these investigations have all been either patients or doctors. It just...
Oh, that sounds so good.
Uh-huh.
That does kind of cool, yeah.
It just that was the first thing that popped in my mind watching this. So.
Yeah, very similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, like you guys brought it up perfectly, you know, there have been, you know, the fan theories that, oh, Alfred is, like, dressing up as, you know, the villains or something to placate, you know, the declining mental state of Bruce or something, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
I think if DC ever revealed that, like, to actually be fact, I think all Batman fans would collectively burn the place down.
I will become the gif of the woman who just looks away from the laptop, like, pushes it away, gets up, and just walks. That'll be me.
As an Elseworlds story, though.
As an Elseworlds, but yeah.
I want it to be the basis of the next. I want it to be the basis of the Batman movie.
No, I like Matt Reeves to do something a little bit more straightforward. Let's get it right. Let's get it straight enough.
Well, moving on, I guess, if we're ready to Crimson, which is another Red K episode. And this episode is just a blast. It's another holiday episode. It's a Valentine's Day episode. And I really love this episode. I think it's one of Tom Welling's strongest performances ever on the show. I mean, there's that when he crashes Lex and Lana's, an engagement dinner?
Engagement, not a rehearsal thing, but yeah, an engagement thing.
Yeah, when he crashes that, and there's one line of his that always, like, his delivery on it, when I think it's Lex who tries to interrupt him and goes, "I'm not done yet." And just Tom Welling's delivery of that, like, it just, like I said, Welling's performance in this episode is just, it's just tremendous. He is so, so good in it. And again, it's sort of, I mean, he's not technically a villain in this episode, but again, just speaking back to how good he is at playing, you know, sort of villainous characters. I mean, as much as I love him as just normal Clark, he is so good every time he gets to play, like, a different version of Clark like this. But particularly when he played, like, a villainous version of Clark. So I just love that. And this episode starts the, you know, Lana finding out Clark's secret, because she gets that thing that Lex tried to stab him with. And she basically just starts her journey to discovering a secret, which I love. So, yes, Crimson, amazing episode in my opinion.
Yeah, I enjoyed it quite a bit. You're right about Tom Welling being able to play more off-kilter versions, you know, of Clark very well. I know it's kind of a dick move, but I don't care because screw it. When Clark outs, you know, the pregnancy thing.
Yes, oh my goodness.
I'm like, you know what, this relationship is sick and disgusting. You know, so good for him that he screwed you guys over. And then seeing Lois and sort of how, taken and sort of caught up in Clark she is. First of all, her outfit in the episode, I'm really fond of. and I'm even more fond of the placement of her tattoo. But the coolest part for me was the part where they leap from building to building. Because, damn it, that's... you could tell me he was leaping, and he probably was, but in my head, he was flying with Lois, and that's my headcanon. And screw everybody if they don't agree with me, I don't care. it was well shot. The visuals look great, and that was a highlight for me. I enjoyed the episode. Jordan, Ryan,
As usual, nothing. It was a different way to have Clark get exposed to the Red K,
But I think that goes back to like what we were talking about with Subterranean, where they're recycling old storylines, kind of old gimmicks. And I think that's one of the cons of having seasons that go 20 plus episodes is you're going to start recycling stuff from previous seasons, which a lot of shows do. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I thought is it season 3 with when he takes the red K ring?
The first red K instance is episode 4 of season 2, which is red. But then he takes it again at the end of season 2, going into season 3. That's
into Metropolis and with Morgan Edge. Yeah, I think
that's overall
was a far better implementation of Red K.
Agreed. Yeah, agreed. Oh yeah.
So not inherently bad, but like with Subterranean, the concept had been done better.
Like I said, I don't think it's when Jordan describes it as great. Or amazing.
It's enjoyable. It's enjoyable for what it is. Yeah.
Given what it was as a Valentine's Day episode, I got a kick out of it. Yeah. And again, that leap slash flying moment with Lois, that gives the episode.
And I'm sure for the Klonna shippers in our lives, Jordan and. A little shout out to my best friend Max, who loves Smallville, and he's a hardcore Klonna shipper too.
You should start
a club with him.
I'll tell Max to send you a message, and you two can geek out.
You guys can be friends on Facebook. It'd be nice.
I'm sure seeing Clark interrupt the engagement party the way he did brought a smile to your faces.
Yes, it did.
Well, it has a moment for everybody. See that? Yeah, it's.
What's that?
And yeah, that relationship, it has a moment for everybody, so that's good.
And I'll say just a couple other things about this episode. One, seeing Lois act so out of character is hilarious, and Jimmy even points that out in this episode, how funny it is. But then also, just seeing Jimmy again, I'll talk about Jimmy again, getting to see him again save the day again, because he's the one who gets the antidote. So I love that about this episode as well. Moving on to another sort of psychological thriller episode, which is Trespass, which is an amazing episode where basically Lana is getting stalked, and then she...
We should have a drinking game every time you say the word amazing episode.
When we're done talking about Smallville, it'll probably be 218 times, because that's how many episodes of Smallville there is. Or 217 if you count Absolute Justice as just one episode. So,
okay, folks, write in if you want us to do this drinking game for the next Smallville review. Let us know.
Oh God!
And you can prepare ahead of time.
Thank God I'll sit that one out.
But this episode, it's another psychological thriller. It's pretty scary there at the end when Brady tells Lana that he's like got everybody sent home from Luther Mansion. It reminds me a little bit of The Shining there at the end. But I also love, there's another great Klonna moment that I love where she goes, basically she realizes the safest place is the Kent Farm because that's where nobody would expect that she would go. And she finds, basically she finds her old kryptonite necklace there. And it's so sweet that she sees that Clark still has that. And I love that.
Okay.
I'm sorry. It wasn't Brady. I said Brady was the security guard. Brady was the good one. Brady was the one who. It was Mac was the bad one. Mac killed Brady. My bad.
I don't know. The episode. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. It was just there for me. It didn't really do anything one way or the other for me. Be honest. I really have nothing much to add. What do you say?
I'm kind of with you, Adam. This is. It was meh. I'll never say. Okay, I'll take that back. It wasn't meh. It was just kind of there. In the moment, like I do almost every Smallville episode. I enjoy it in the moment, but then. Just
Yeah, fair enough.
Well, next we move on to Michael Rosenbaum's directorial episode.
Oh my God.
Which is Freak, which another episode that I love because of how it feels like a classic Smallville episode in a lot of ways. It's I guess it's a little bit like Extinction or a little bit like Hidden, where it's somebody trying to, you know, wipe out meteor freaks, I guess. But I love the whole idea. I love that it feels like classic Smallville. Like, Tobias Rice, his character, feels like a classic Smallville character. I mean, somebody who can identify meteor freaks. Like, that's so, it's mm-hmm. so classic Smallville. Like, this feels like... Yeah.
He's blind, and he can identify who.
Yes, yes. And it's very, very, it feels very nostalgic to the early seasons. Mm-hmm. It's an episode where Chloe finds out she's a meteor freak, so that's a huge development on the show that I think is awesome. And that scene where Clark, basically, he does what he does in the Superman Doomsday animated movie, where he, or actually, it's the replacement Superman in that movie, but where he does the thing with the mirror, where he zaps his, he does the heat vision on his own forehead. But he does that with Chloe to burn out the GPS tracker that's in her. So that's like a really brutal, like intense moment that is really well done. But I just love it. Like the whole thing, I mean, at the bowling alley, I mean, how classic Smallville is that? Like Chloe and Lana at the bowling alley. Like this episode is just, it's so classic. It's so charming. And it has that really, really exciting development at the end. So I really love that about this episode. And there's a little bit of Lana stuff too that I love too, with towards the end of the episode, Lana reassures Clark that even if he were a meteor freak, like she had suspected he was a meteor freak because, you know, she was starting to get on him, but then obviously he's technically not a meteor freak. He has powers, but he's an alien, obviously. But basically, because Tobias Rice confirms he's not a meteor freak, and but Lana telling him, you know, it's okay, I'll still accept you, even if, I mean, basically, she reassures Clark of that she'll still accept him, like, no matter what. So, I love that.
Yeah, this episode's a no-go for me. You know, recycled plots, Freak of the Week again, it just, I don't know.
What do you have against Freak of the Weeks, Adam?
It's exhausted plot lines that we've been there, done.
It's classic Smallville.
It doesn't move the story forward. It's they may have a minute long, you know, scene at the end or 30 seconds, 45 seconds that moves the story forward, but the rest is like, I don't know. To me, it was again a waste. Not anything to write home about for me. That's all I got.
I can respect when they this far into the show when they wanna homage, quote unquote, like what Jordan's calling classic, you know, types of styles of episodes from the first few seasons. But I think one of the I can understand why Adam might be against it, because I mean, let's face it, as much as I love Smallville, as much as my friend Max loves Smallville, you know, the first couple seasons were pretty much only Freak of the Week stuff with no lore mythology building, and those were kind of a slug to get through.
What?
Enjoyable and fun in the moment.
A slug? No. I'm sorry. I love all of Smallville, but the early seasons, that is my jam. Like, my favorite seasons are the early seasons.
To me, that I can't. Adam, back me up here.
The reason I'm not saying anything is because I've learned long ago there's no point
I can enjoy the early seasons for what they are. I enjoy Clark's high school years.
But here's the thing, though, Ryan, the way you're saying.
Okay.
Even if there were Freak of the Weeks, some of them were done better in season one than some of the, you know, what we're seeing here.
Yeah, like I would say, like, episode two, Bug Boy, has one hell of a payoff in season 10 that I did not see coming, and I love when he, spoiler alert, when he comes back.
Yeah. No, but what I'm saying is, even some of the Freak of the Week episodes of season one were done a lot better than, you know, like this one, this episode. This was just... I mean,
like I was saying, like I can enjoy the high school years.
but it's season 5 and beyond where it's, that's my jam, because that's kicking the door down on the DC universe at large. That it's just me. It's just me.
I get that. I absolutely adore every season of Smallville. Personally, mm-hmm. for me, the early ones, with the exception of season 7, which is my second favorite season of the whole show, other than that, the early seasons I slightly prefer. But like, I love every season. So I'm not gonna argue too hard on that, because I love the later seasons too. So
I do too. It's just, you know,
it's just you and I can be more critical of Smallville than Jordan.
Yeah,
that's what it boils down to.
Like Adam, how it goes to how, you know, the Transformer movies, like we're talking about on Bayverse, that, you know, I love those movies so much, you know, more than a lot of other fans do. But I can also, you know, I can on one hand, you know, turn one, you know, flip a couple switches so that I'm not thinking all that much, and I can just enjoy the hell out of them for what they are. But then when I turn on the more critical thinking side of me, it's like I can pinpoint stuff that's like, that, you know, could be better, could be.
Whereas, you know, God bless Jordan, he can't do that with Smallville.
It doesn't mean that I'm nitpicking or critiquing. It doesn't mean that I don't like something. It just means that I think it could have been better. They could have done it better.
Well, one more thing I'll mention about Freak is that I really love that with a meteor freak at the beginning of the episode who is giving Lana bowling tips. I like that. Like, I always love when we see meteor freaks who aren't evil, who are just, you know, they're just good people who are, you know, have these powers. And so I love that every once in a while we see that. Like, we saw it in Hug. We see it here. So I really like that. Even Tobias Rice, you could say, I mean, he doesn't have bad intentions. He's sort of being, you know, manipulated almost, I could, yes, you'd say. Moving on to another just incredible episode, which is Promise. And my goodness, okay, first of all, I got to say, I stand before how amazing the music in season 6 is. I mean, again, all the music on Smallville is amazing, but another reason why season 6 is up there, if we're ranking just the seasons by music, why it's one of the best, You Could Be Happy by Snow Patrol, I consider one of the five best songs in Smallville history. This song, I was literally in my car one time listening to the song on my Smallville playlist and just broke down in tears thinking about this episode in relation to it. And I just... This song, the lyrics of this song, and you know what? Let me pull up the lyrics, because I love how these lyrics tie back in. Like, they make me think about early Clark and Lana in, like, season 1. Like, and how far things have gone and how different things are. Like, you could be happy and I won't know, but you weren't happy the day I watched you go. Is it too late to remind you how we were? Most of what I remember makes me sure I should have stopped you from walking out the door. You could be happy, I hope you are. You made me happier than I'd been by far. I mean, my goodness, this song just, I mean...
And we're all happy you didn't actually sing that.
I know, Joy, you should just outright saying that. Come on.
You could be happy.
Oh, stop, please. We don't want to lose listeners. It's so
I tried to sing a song about Supergirl last episode, and I don't think it went over very well. So I'm going to try and stop singing. But anyway, I adore that song. And like I said, it's so moving, and the way they use it in this episode is so – I mean, it's incredible. This episode is so – it's so heartbreaking. Okay, first of all, I'll tell you, the first time I watched this episode, and, you know, coming at this as a diehard Lana shipper, the scene where Lana tells Clark she's not going through with the marriage to Lex, I literally, like, jumped out of my seat and screamed when she said, like, I was so happy. And obviously, things don't play out quite that way over the course of the episode. Obviously, like I said before, we know they get back together, so it's all good. But over the course of the episode, there's this scene, one of the lines of Lana Luthor that stands out the most to me in terms of John Glover's performance in the entire show is when he tells Lana, the way he delivers this line, I will kill Clark Kent. The way he delivers that line just has always stuck out to me in my head. Getting Nell again in this episode, I mean, bringing her back, I just thought was amazing. I mean, I just think that, again, such a great callback to, you know, the early seasons. I mean, she hasn't been on the show since season two, and bringing her back, I mean, just, oh, I love it so much. So this episode, and seeing Lex really go overboard when he kills the doctor who's trying to blackmail him. I mean, just Lex just completely unhinged, and, you know, man, this episode, the scene where Clark confronts Lana at the end, after Lana has gone through with the wedding, and he says, tell me that you'd rather be with, I want you to look me in my eyes and tell me that you'd rather be with Lex Luthor instead of with me. And Welling's performance in that scene, and the way you can see his heart breaking in that scene, oh my goodness, I love it. This episode is phenomenal.
You love seeing, you know, Clark's heartbreak?
It's as a Klonoa shipper, seeing how much his heart breaks, because it reinforces the love he has for her, how heartbroken he is over this. So even though it is devastating to watch, yes, I do love it. One more thing about this episode, which is the way it's done, though, it sort of starts in media res, and then it sort of is shot non-linearly, and you get different people's perspectives. It reminds me of the episode Spirit, which is one of my favorite episodes from season four, and the way they did the same thing with that episode. So,
Here's what I liked. I liked the Lionel stuff and how he was manipulating Lana.
Do you like that line yet? I will kill Clark.
Yeah. And also, but also when you, like, it helps, like, it adds context for later on when you realize why he did it, which adds to the episode, right?
Talk about that scene though, where Lana's like, she's so furious with him, and she's like pinching the pain drug that he's got going into his bed, and then the revelation when he does make that revelation there, it's such an important pivotal moment.
But the cool thing too is when there's the scene where he slapped Lex? Am I thinking the wrong? Yeah. When he's like, you can't do anything, you're, so I even have to help you, you know.
Yeah, because the dead with the dead body, from the doctor, yeah.
Yeah, and he slaps him out. Yeah, that was cool. But I also like the way sort of how Lana manipulated Chloe to sort of revealing Clark's secret.
Yes.
Was very much a callback to the way Alicia manipulated Chloe to reveal, to get her to see Clark's secret. It was kind of,
I've noticed that throughout the, not just in this season, like with how Lana figures out, but, you know, Chloe, Lana, Lois, how they all figure it out and just not tell Clark for the longest time.
That's true. So yeah, those were some of the things I liked about it.
Nothing too much for me. You guys pretty much have said.
All right. Okay.
Cool. Well, then we move on to combat, which features one of the best fight scenes in Smallville history, which is the Clark versus Titan fight, which is just absolutely epic.
Adam, who do you think was better, Batista or Kane?
This is like comparing vomit to diarrhea. But if I had to compare the two, I'll give it to Kane only because the fight scene was actually
better. It's epic. That fight scene is epic. I mean, it's so epic. I don't know any other way to describe it. But, and then we also get Michael Eklund back in the show, who was in Jitters. He's that guard at LexCorp that he's there working, he's like vacuuming the floor at the beginning of that episode.
Is he the ring promoter?
I mean, Earl is trying to get in there, and he's like...
Yeah, but he's the ring promoter in this,
right?
Was he the ring promoter?
Yes, in this episode, he's the ring promoter. In that episode, he was the janitor. But he's also, he was the doll maker on Arrow, and he played the character of Bob on Gotham, so he's got a lot of DC cred to his name. But anyway, I thought that was cool bringing him back, and he is a.
So he must have moved from Vancouver to New York at some point.
call for Gotham. Yeah,
that's basically the truth. Yeah,
but I think he gives. I think this is this performance of him in combat is just excellent. He's so emotive in the role, and he's so like.
See, I thought it was so goofy. It was just so.
He's creepy.
It was. You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of what's his face? Spider-Man.
Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, but even more over the top than that.
Well,
and so,
I
yeah.
love that performance
yeah.
anyway. But anyway, I think this episode is pretty awesome.
Like I said, this is a glorified commercial for Vince McMahon, but the fight was like I if I had to recommend this episode, I would say just fast forward to the fight. And that's pretty much all I have to say. Ryan,
I as typical tonight, I'm kind of with you guys.
We're on total, where are you,
where it kind of the only real standout point was the Clark versus the WWE round two.
Yeah, I mean literally, did they have some kind of pact with Vince McMahon at this point? I don't understand what the whole.
Well, at least Triple H didn't show up.
That would have been even worse. Have you seen Blade Trinity? Blade Trinity.
And I
can't believe there were people on message boards back in the day campaigning for him as Thor. Are you joking?
Are you serious?
No word of a lie.
Oh, God.
This is the state of our fandom. They complain about Ruby Rose being not gay enough to play Batwoman, and they wanted Triple H as Thor.
But how about we just all agree to not take internet fandoms seriously anymore?
Yeah, that's a good call.
Or at least certain
members,
let's just say.
Yeah. All right, what's the next episode, Jordan?
Moving on to Progeny, which is where we get Wonder Woman. Linda Carter playing Mara Sullivan in this episode. She gives a really emotional performance in this episode that I think is, the scenes with her and Chloe, like young Chloe at the beginning, and then when she's like she's fading away at the end with, you know, adult Chloe at the end, then Clark telling Chloe at the end, like some really emotional stuff in this episode, like Clark telling Chloe at the end that he did tell her mother how great a reporter she was. I mean, just great stuff there. And really seeing Lex he does some really truly despicable stuff in this episode, the way he manipulates Moira. So this episode is phenomenal.
I enjoyed this episode mainly for Linda Carter's performance. Anytime you get to see her come back to the DC world is nice. Mm-hmm.
Even though she never really did anything Superman before, you know.
Yeah, but at that point, much like DC fans, probably the people at Smallville thought, well, they're never actually going to make a Wonder Woman movie, so let's get her in here. I liked her interaction. Mm-hmm. With both the younger and older Chloe. Mm-hmm. So it was a solid episode.
Yeah. Nothing new to add. Just, you know, re-emphasizing a love of seeing Linda Carter show up.
Here's an idea. Why don't we let Ryan start with his thoughts on this episode?
No, I prefer to hear from you guys first.
Why? This way you can get we can get your raw thoughts right off the get-go.
How about we do that for Noir and like upcoming episodes. Noir. And,
okay, fair enough. All right, fair enough. Jordan, what's going on with Nemesis?
Okay, Nemesis. Okay, first of all, another Caroline Dries written episode. Lex and Clark basically stuck underground together, and what I love here is that there's a tiny part of him left. Up until there's a point next season where he literally burns the good part of himself and destroys it forever. But this is this episode where I love because you see that there's just a little bit of good Lex left, because like he does help Clark there when they're stuck in that situation. And he even has a line where he tells Clark that he's the closest thing to a friend that he's ever had. And so you see, like, I mean, it tugs at the heartstrings because you think back to their friendship back from season one, and it's just like where things have gone. But you see that there's just a little bit left of their bond there. And another thing I love in this episode is the Klonna stuff, because there's this part of this episode where...
Really? Wow, I'm just floored.
Was that?
I would have never guessed.
Because Lana knows how to save them, and she doesn't do it until she finds out Clark is down there. She knows how to get in there. And so it just shows that how much she cares about Clark. And she, I mean, Chloe even says that to Clark. She tells him exactly what happened there. And she's like, I think I would bet that Lana still loves you. And she tells that to Clark. And so I love that about this episode. And
yeah, once Lana knew how to get down there, she was probably like, you know what? I wish Lex had a ponytail too, but he doesn't, so I'm not going to save him. That's probably...
I like my men to have hair.
Yeah, she's anti-bald. But she's anti-follically challenged people. I like this episode. It's one of the good ones written by Caroline Dries, our soon-to-be Batgirl co-showrunner.
Batwoman.
Or producer. Batwoman, yeah. Okay. Again, starring Ruby Rose, who is perfectly fine for the role. The funny thing is, I have to mention this because this is almost a verbatim episode to a Superboy episode.
Really?
Yeah, The Adventures of Superboy. I'm not the guru that Sam J. Rizzo is on all things Superboy. He would know the exact title, air date, and what season that aired. But I can tell you that the plot is basically the same. Blow for blow, Clark and Lex get stuck in the mine, and it's riddled with kryptonite, and they talk about their past and all that stuff, and then Lex has to make the choice of helping Clark, in this case / Superboy, out or not, and so they have to work together to survive. So it's very much the same episode. The reason I will give Smallville the edge in this case is predominantly because I prefer his Lex over Sherman Howard's Lex, who was Lex on Superboy. So, but yeah, other than that, it was the same. But it was still good. I still enjoyed this episode, even though I had seen it on a different iteration of
Mind Games. Character. The name of that episode of Superboy.
Yeah. All right. There you go. See, so Sam will be proud that you while I was talking, you clearly looked it up on IMDb.
to the Google. Actually, the Smallville wiki had it in there.
Well, for this yeah. Well,
they said it was very similar either to way. The Superboy episode Mind yeah. Games.
Yeah,
it was done on purpose.
Yeah, I'm not discounting that. So I really like this episode. Again, you see bits of the old Lex still present here, and that was kind of nice.
And not just the old Lex, but like the one thing I wanted to bring up was how at this episode, you know that Clark and Lex are destined to, battle each other out, for the rest of their days, but it does make you harken back and desire to have the old days back of when Clark and Lex were best buds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it totally makes you like.
You know, it breaks your heart that it's gotten so violent and vicious between the two of them, and yet think back to season one when Lex is gifting Clark stuff just for saving him and not questioning him.
Yeah. See, Clark back in the day was stupid. Yeah, I would have taken the car.
I don't know how I would have hidden a giant truck like that, but I would have figured it out.
I would have figured out a way.
That's what's brilliant about what Smallville did is having this tragic demise of their friendship where, like, then when you get to moments where they are at odds in the later seasons and just the emotion there because you've gone on this journey with them, and you've watched this relationship just fall apart that they have, to the point where they're enemies at this point when they were best friends. So it's that's what Smallville did so brilliantly with that friendship, and it's just
mad. Oh yeah, there's nobody's going to argue that point to you, for sure.
Cool. Well, RH, you wanted to take the lead on noir.
I'm not as good at doing the summary as you are, but I do want to. I can start out by saying the one aspect I really like about noir is how, in the dream world, alternate world, however you want to look at it, of the 1940 version of Metropolis.
It was 1939 though, right? Or was it 38 or 39?
Late 30s, early 40s.
It was whatever year Superman debuted.
No, it was not much older. 1940. Was it? It was 1940, and Superman debuted in
1939. Well, it should have been the year Superman debuted.
It would have been nice.
Like, did nobody look that up? Like, come on. Continue, right?
I think they did it in the 40s because that's when I think film noir was more popular.
Yeah.
Would anybody have really complained about the year being 2 years removed or before? No.
I'm with Adam on this one. It would have been, it's not necessary, but it would have been nice.
For Superman lore purposes and what they were doing, I would have done it. But yeah, go on.
Where, because this is all like Jimmy's imagination. So
yeah,
Clark is just a normal dude. Jimmy has no idea that Clark can do all these, you know, amazing things. And how, you know, he just interprets everyone, you know, from Lionel to what, like the bartender or something? Or
yeah, he's a bartender.
Or something. And of course, you know,
he's a bartender / informant.
And, you know,
I just thought about back to Labyrinth. One of the most brilliant things I thought about from that episode was Lex with the wheelchair, where you find out what happened to him on the bridge and the twist they did with that. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I totally forgot about that when we were talking about it, and it just popped in my head.
Oh, yeah, that was cool. Yeah, I really like that too.
That was, and again, totally plausible. Like the idea that it's just this crazy twist on what actually happened.
Yeah, if he had actually gotten hit by a car at that speed, he'd either be paralyzed or dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah. Very plausible.
Yeah, and the way that's the reason for Lex's hatred towards Clark is just, it's so brilliantly done. So anyway, I'm sorry, Ryan, I just...
No, you're fine. I was just thinking of that, too. Yeah. One thing that just came to my mind right this second was, who thought that they were watching Batman Begins when the episode started?
Yeah, with that the shot of the city. Uh-huh. Yeah, it looked very much like the Narrows. Hey, if they're gonna borrow from something. Here. That was awesome.
Yeah, it's another one like Alexmas, another Labyrinth. I'm surprised they did this concept. You know, yeah, two different characters, but. How they did this twice in one season, but you know, they also had Clark fight wrestlers twice, so
yeah.
You know
what I really liked about it was the fact that, yeah, Jimmy doesn't know about Clark's powers, but Clark in his dream world was essentially doing the full on Superman thing, with the caveat that instead of running around dressed up in a blue and red getup, he was a cop.
Yeah.
But his undercover identity was mild-mannered reporter.
There's even a joke about that. They're like, can you imagine Clark Kent being a crime fighter by night and a mild-mannered reporter by day?
Yeah, but he, like, before he was doing it in Smallville timeline proper, this was our first look at Bumble, like, Tom Welling and the Smallville universe's take on, you know, the quote-unquote bumbling Clark Kent routine. It was the first we saw it here. And
Tom Welling, you know, channeling, you know, bumbling Chris Reeve as Clark Kent, too.
Well, I've always viewed Tom Welling's interpretation of Clark
Daily Planet Clark.
The glasses, Daily, yeah. As more George Reeves.
Okay. Yeah.
Chris Reeve.
Okay. Yeah.
But that's my. We'll get into that later when we actually see that episode. But I like that they were basically doing the Superman, the full on Superman thing without
powers, without
the power. Yeah. That was really
and
as
someone
cool.
who really likes and appreciates, you know, the classic late 30s, early 40s, you know, film noir, which is the name of the episode, noir, types of gangster movies.
So Jordan, when Matt Reeves talks about noir, you know, that's what he's talking about.
I hope you watch this Smallville episode.
Well.
Just do noir present day.
Now you're gonna have people saying, "Oh my God, they're gonna listen to our podcast and say those guys are saying that Matt Reeves' Batman is gonna be black and white."
Well, black and white and set in the 30s, which I know there's a couple people that I think we all know that would love that. And I don't want to see that.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh, did you talk about noir?
No, I haven't talked about it yet.
All right, go.
So I love this episode. I love that it's a Jerry Jimmy centric episode. I love it, you know, adding a lot to Jimmy's character. Just the idea that he loves film noir, like the way he's like reading off lines as the characters are saying them on the screen. Which, frankly, that's like how I am with Smallville. So that kind of is pretty funny. But I love that. Just a really sweet moment between Chloe and Jimmy there at the beginning. I think the film noir aspect of this episode is just really cool. I think they do a really amazing job with it. And, like I said, just getting another Jimmy-centric episode. Like, we get another one next season with Sleeper, and this is like that. So, yeah, I love this episode. Yeah. Absolutely love it.
Good one, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Moving on to Prototype. So we get Tom O'Pennycat, who... He appeared very briefly in Nemesis, but now he's back here. And he played earlier, he played Garrett's brother Vince in the episode Resurrection in season 3. So this is his second Smallville role. So he's back, and he's playing Lois's ex-army boyfriend, I guess we'll call him. But yeah, I think this is a really good episode. This is an episode that sort of sets up what happens, I guess, in Phantom. Mm. So it's sort of like a setup for the season finale. And I think this episode is I think it's pretty amazing. And so I think that the stuff between Lois and Wes is very well done. And
for me it was nice to get a little bit more of Lois's backstory filled in, you know, the army brat aspect of it and all that. It was a nice touch to get some of that worked in there. So that was a big takeaway for me, and like you said, it set up the finale quite nicely.
It just made me want to fast forward to the finale.
All right, fair enough. So you weren't a fan of this particular episode?
It definitely did, you know, feel like how what Jordan was saying, where it was, you know, a part, you know, part one. Kind of feeling where. Like, okay, I get it. Let's just move on to the finale. I'm with you. You know, I always like it when we get to see character backstories more in depth. I always wondered why they called her Project Ares. It just made me think of Wonder Woman.
Yeah, especially in hindsight.
Might have been intentional, not actually.
Maybe.
Could be. Yeah. Well, more because Lex was getting like preparing for a war, right? Mm-hmm. With the metahumans.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
And so Ares, god of war, kind of
Doesn't necessarily need to be. Yeah. Sure.
Us geeks will think one. us comic nerds will think Wonder Woman. Everybody else will think god of war.
You know, we're in the right.
Or Xena or Hercules, but yeah.
Well, of course, with us being the comic nerds, we're right.
Yeah, of course. So I guess that brings us to the finale then.
Yes, indeed. To Phantom, where, oh my goodness, is this an eventful episode or what? Okay, we get Martian Manhunter doing his best John Constantine impersonation in the opening scene. where he's trying to perform basically a Phantom Zoner exorcism, I guess you could call it, which is just really cool. We get Martha leaving as a series regular, which is sad. And I mean, I just it's that's the only way I can describe it. It's sad. We get Clara coming back together, which I love so much, where Clark finally, I mean, Lana already knew a secret, but Clark tells her like everything, like that he's an alien and everything. And oh my goodness, that's
and just how just so okay with it she is. It's like, wow, we wasted a couple of years of him freaking out.
I love it because he was so worried about it. But Clark, I mean, sorry, but Lana loves him no matter what.
But then he's like he should have remembered. What was the 100th episode? Was that Reckoning? Yeah, he realized. Oh, she would have been fine with it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So why keep hiding it?
Well, the reason he kept hiding it was because he thought it would put her in danger. Which is because what happened in Reckoning when he did tell her, and it wound up getting her. I mean, she wound up dying after he told her. So he was worried that.
But then he got his dad to die instead. Damn it.
Yeah,
that's true.
There's still a part of me that thinks they should have just gone with that. You know, have that be the twist of Reckoning where Lana dies and not Jonathan.
No!
Would have been great because, Jordan, you would have got 4 seasons of Clana. Four and a half.
At least Batman issue 50 didn't kill Catwoman. Okay.
I wouldn't have gotten season 7 Clana, which is when they're finally like really happy together for a long through period.
Yeah, and then season 8 she leaves and it doesn't matter.
Well,
anyway.
Season 8 then we get 5 more episodes of her back and they're back together again and oh, it's amazing. But
and she doesn't end up with him either way, so it doesn't matter. But anyway,
In my head canon, she still winds up with him because she gets the kryptonite taken out of her in the season 11 comics. So in my head canon, they wind up back together. But
you belong in that episode, Labyrinth.
So the whole love affair and marriage between Clark and Lois just.
Well, in my head canon, that things don't go. I mean, basically, Clark gets back together with Lana, basically. However it happens.
Jordan wrote his own Elseworld in his head.
It's an Elseworld.
The final thing I think is important to mention about this episode is, of course, he's like Clark, but he's a little more bizarre.
Do you want me to go first, or do you...
Yeah, go. Right.
I have always preferred... I mean, I like the bumbling... dummy Bizarro, but I really, out of every Bizarro we've gotten, this how they do Bizarro here, with him just being a darker Clark, not the bumper, but a darker Clark, a more violent version. I like this more than like the comics version.
I agree.
Bizarro. Yeah. Well, okay. What I'll say quickly is this. I did like, ultimately, two of my favorite things of the episode was the way Lana was able to screw over Lex and he gets arrested. That whole thing, because he deserved it. After all
the stuff. He deserves a lot worse.
Yeah, well, yeah, but at least he got some measure of, temporarily, some payback, right? And I'm in agreement with you guys, because I find Bizarro, especially to read, is a pain in the ass. It gives me a headache. So if you're gonna do Bizarro, I actually like this take. And I thought, for the bit that we get to see of Tom Welling as Bizarro in this episode, and then later at the beginning of 7, I think he's very good in the role, and I like the way they did the effect with his face at the very end of the episode.
Yeah.
That was really well done.
I hope I'm not misremembering, but didn't Supergirl, when they did Bizarro for her, did they do something?
Yeah, because of it.
Or no?
Yeah, they did.
Like a face effect? Okay.
Yeah, it was a face, but it was more. I think they took out they toned down the dumb stupidity of it,
which would have just been way.
But it was more
for. I mean, not that Smallville is like dark and gritty, like Dark Knight trilogy. But it's also not camp.
No, but what I think Supergirl, the exception with Supergirl is that they made it look a little bit closer to the comics than Smallville did, but they still toned down the bumbling stupidity of the character. Yeah, or her, I should say.
And that version of Bizarro was, you know, ended up being sympathetic.
The Supergirl one you're talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This one's just a dick.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. So no, I thought it was a good episode. Good, like I said, it was a good tease, especially the way it ended with that flight scene, for what was to come. For it was a good way to end.
And also our first, I think it's our first glimpse at Chloe and her power, like exactly what her power.
Yeah, when Lois. Yes, that's a good
No, it was. But again, Smallville's always been good at, you know, one thing, no matter what you say about Smallville.
Fantastic season opener. Season finales.
Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
All right. Well,
alrighty.
We're about out of time, so I guess.
I guess we should rate this thing.
Yeah.
All right. Ryan, you are the guest of honor, so you will give us a rating.
I know that I've been coming off as more or less lukewarm on a lot of episodes, but I'm still going to give it overall an 8 out of 10, I guess. Because...
Letter grade.
That's okay.
No, you're good.
Yeah, Jordan likes to do letter grades.
I'll do it as a B+. Like I was saying, cool. Despite a lot of quote, you know, mostly filler episodes and my reception kind of being a little general mediocre meh towards a lot of them.
Yeah.
The expansions that they did as a whole with the DC universe, introducing Green Arrow, bringing back Bart, Arthur, Victor, and the Justice League, and setting up Bizarro.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we would find out in season 7 with, you know, what was the dam hiding, you know, or what was in the riverbed with, spoiler alert, Kara. That's why I, you know, season 6 is one of my favorite seasons, up there with 10 too.
Cool. Jordan, I think we know what your rating is going to be in the general area, but
yes,
we need to ask anyway.
Yes, well,
yeah, it's just a formality at this point.
Every other season of Smallville has been for me, I won't say whether it's going to continue this trend, but you can probably assume.
As if we don't know.
It's an A+ for me. I adore season 6. Bringing in Jimmy, bringing in Green Arrow, bringing the Justice League together, doing an incredible psychological thriller episode like Labyrinth, bringing Clark and Lana back together beautifully by the end of the season. Introducing Martian Manhunter, introducing Bizarro. This season, like every other season of Smallville, it's an absolute masterpiece in my eyes. And I absolutely adore it. So, no question about it, an A+ for me.
All right. And I will go, because I think my summary is very much in line with Ryan's, I'll just go ahead and give a rating. And that is a B. Solid B. That's my take on the season.
What were some of your highlights?
Well, I mean, obviously, the Green Arrow stuff. Pretty much every main episode that he appeared in was great.
Of course.
The Justice League was phenomenal. Really liked Labyrinth. And they gave me, and it would pay off late in season 7. They gave me a Bizarro that didn't give me a splitting headache. So all that added together is where my B goes. I think for me, there was far too much filler/also-ran episodes. Mm-hmm. That's why I can't give it a B+ or higher. But solid B is nothing to sneeze at.
Did you say nothing to sneeze at?
Yeah.
Hey, like that?
You like that, don't you? That was good. Yeah. That's why I did it.
And on that joke.
Yeah, exactly. So let's do their usual. We got to remind everybody, because this was a rather light Batman episode, but We are part of the Batman Podcast Network, hosted by Batman on Film. And if you want other Batman-centric podcasts, you can go there, and there's a whole host of them that will scratch that itch. In terms of where to find us, Ryan, where can we find you on social media?
Even though I haven't been very active on Twitter lately, that's because I'm in the process of rebooting a social media presence in a way. Right now, and where you can find updates on that, follow me at Reaxus Prime. That is R-H-I-A-X-U-S Prime. And if you want to try and find me on Facebook, you're more than welcome to, at Ryan Heelsman. You can see my pretty face.
There you go. if you don't know what he looks like, well, then you're kind of out of luck. But Jordan, where the hell can we find you?
Yes, well, I am back on Twitter.
You are?
I am, yes.
Oh, cool. Where the hell is that? At the Phantom Zone.
Where is it? Smallville Lover.
Close.
I'm willing to bet that that's not far off.
Smallville Fan JV on Twitter.
See?
Oh my God. That was
close. Yeah, you were right in the ballpark. I gotta go, and now I gotta add you back.
And you can find me on most other social media at Jordan from Smallville. I also want to say that I've said this before, but I'll give one final reminder, because this will be the final episode to release before this happens, which will be that I'll be on a few panels at DragonCon this year, which are the Phantom Was a Way of Life panel, the Black Lightning panel, and the Krypton panel. I will no longer be on the Gotham panel. I had to drop out of that one due to a conflict, because it conflicts with one of the Smallville panels, one of the Smallville cast panels.
Wow, so you chose Smallville over Gotham? Well, you know what? I gotta give you credit for going back to your roots, if you will.
What's that?
You're going back to your roots. So the fact
I'll take Smallville over anything. I mean, Smallville's my favorite thing ever. I mean, so I'll take that over anything.
Well, that's what I mean. You're going back to your roots. It's good. Yeah.
So I prioritize Smallville, as I will always.
Okay.
But I won't be on the Gotham panel anymore. But I'm very excited. I actually bought a photo op for DragonCon with. I met Michael Rosenbaum last year. But this year I bought a photo op that's a Smallville package photo op. So it's Tom Welling, Michael Rosenbaum, and Aaron Ashmore all together in one photo.
Oh, God,
so I'm so excited to meet them. I'm like ridiculously.
So Jordan is officially poor, folks. Because I that costs a pretty penny.
$200, yeah. It is worth it to meet the three of them.
So when there are no episodes of the podcast for a month, blame Jordan, because he couldn't afford to help pay for the service. Because
it's okay, I'll pick up the slack for a month or two.
I also have some iTunes reviews, so if you like what you hear from us, or if you don't, well, in either case, we'd love to hear from you, and it would help us out a lot. So thank you in advance.
And if you want to follow me, you can at Superhero Sci-Fi, and we'll talk about superhero related, obviously. That's pretty much it. Until next time, we hope you have a wonderful week or weekend whenever you are listening to this particular episode. Until next time, so long, everybody.
Klana forever. Bye-bye.
See ya.